Or, well, actually, let's come into order. This is Wednesday, December 9th, morning session of the Portland City Council. Good morning. Keelan, could you please call the roll?
Morning, Mayor. New Daly?
Here.
Fritz?
I'm here. I have a terrible phone line, so I'm going to sign off and get back on again immediately. But I'm here.
Ryan?
Here.
Hardesty?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by video and teleconference. The city has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at at portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of COVID-19 pandemic, the need to limit in-person contact and promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare. Thanks for your patience while we manage through this challenging time. We'll now hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meetings. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Thank you. So before we begin the agenda this morning, I want to take a moment to recognize our city attorney, Tracy Reeve, on her last day with the city. Tracy was born in Portland. She's a fourth generation Oregonian. After spending several years in private practice, Tracy joined the city attorney's office in 1991 and was appointed city attorney in 2014. Since then, she has provided steady, collaborative leadership of the best. She's led the best legal team I've ever known, and she certainly helped the office to keep its reputation as the best public law office in the state of Oregon. In her nearly 7 years as city attorney, and in the 4 years I've had the privilege to work with Tracy, she's been unwavering as an advocate for the city's interests and in promoting equity both within her office as well as throughout the entire city. And along the way, she's kept us on the straight and narrow, which we appreciate. 2020, let's just say, has been an extraordinary year, to put a positive spin on it. And the volume and the complexity of the legal work coming at Tracy and her team has been almost unimaginable. Responding to the pandemic, calls for police reform, protests, federal intervention, an unprecedented number of lawsuits, and on top of all of the other work that the legal work that the city does, this added up, of course, to a very demanding year for Tracy as the leader of that legal team. For those of you who don't know Tracy personally, she is somebody who is a diehard Portlander. She cares about and loves this city as much as anybody in the city. And she cares a lot for the people who live and work in this city. She also cares deeply about her fellow employees who work for the city of Portland. I know for a fact that she has been working on both nights and weekends. I know that because I'm often on the phone with her. And whenever else people aren't working, Tracy usually is. And she has held up a relentless schedule since March. Over these past 9 months, I've admired and appreciated and depended on her ability to provide timely, thoughtful legal advice reflective of Portland's values as well as her own. Tracy, I want to thank you so much for the service that you've provided to the City of Portland, to the City Council, to me, to all of us here. It's been our privilege to serve with you. And I wish you lots of time for yoga and the home improvement projects that I know you're eager to get to. We all wish you joy, peace, and rest in retirement. I can think of few people who deserve it as much as you do. Thank you for everything that you have done for the City of Portland. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Mayor. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve the city and all of the council and the auditor, all of the elected officials, and I just could not have had a better legal career or a better client. We only have one client, and it's the City of Portland, and it's the best client anybody could have in this state. And I just want to say I am so, so proud of my team and the work they've done over the last year. They have done a huge amount of work. We have a lot of, you know, I hired 2/3 of the office in the last 7 years since I've been city attorney because we hit that retirement peak. So we have a lot of fantastically talented younger lawyers with small children at home who have kept on keeping on even in these trying circumstances. And I'm very, very proud of them. And I'm proud to have served as your city attorney. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. We appreciate it so much. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you for opening the meeting and recognition and acknowledgement of the incredible work that Tracy Reese has provided to us here at the City of Portland. I've known Tracy a lot longer than the time that I've been at City Hall. In fact, her and I were on different sides of the table around the settlement agreement with the Department of Justice. But I've always respected her legal mind, her straightforwardness, and her collaborative approach to problem solving. Tracy, I am really going to miss you personally because, as the mayor said, I have called you at very odd hours and you have never once said, "Why are you calling me now?" And you've always given very sound advice. One thing I really wanted to highlight, I think a moment that the City of Portland shined with you, Tracy, was around where abortion rights were being challenged all over the country. And your leadership gave really excellent advice to lawyers all over the country who were trying to figure out how to defend community members' right of choice. And that's just one of the many times that I think that you have distinguished yourself as someone with a compassionate heart and with a fighter spirit and someone who's willing to put it all on the line for your values. So get some rest, but know we're gonna be looking for you with all kind of volunteer opportunities over the next few years. I just wanna add my admiration and appreciation for a career well-served and for a job well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, and I will look forward to watching your continued efforts, especially around police reform. So thank you.
Thank you, and you know I will.
Commissioner Hardesty, thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
Good morning, everybody. Tracy, you've been such a great partner and collaborator over the years that we've both served the City of Portland, and it's I'm truly grateful for all of your service to me personally and to all of the bureaus I've worked with. You're, as the mayor said, you're always prompt in getting us responses and they all make sense, you know. Sometimes they're not the answer that I wanted to read. And I know that you're going to tell me what I need to know rather than what I want to know. And so I appreciate that. Like you, I'm looking forward to getting those invitations to do things and choosing whether or not I want to do them in the future. So again, thank you so much. I wish you and your family all the very best for the holidays and for a very happy retirement.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. And speaking of people who work at all hours of the days and nights, I have gotten many, many emails from you that were sent at 1 or 2 a.m. So I know that your retirement will be very well deserved as well.
I think at some point we'll all be able to say that, won't we, Tracy? Well, thank you again, Tracy. We appreciate everything that you've done. And we wish you all the best and happiness and success and joy in the years ahead. And thank you for sharing your tree with us as well. That's awesome. I always like seeing what other people have on their trees, and you've outdone yourself. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We all need a little brightness right now. Thank you.
Yeah, we do. Indeed. Thank you. Keelan, first up is Communications 951.
Request of Julian Bryant to address council regarding the Borgen project.
Good morning.
Can you guys hear me? Good morning.
You sound good.
How's it going? Thank you so much for letting me address you guys today. My name is Julian Bryant. I'm a resident of Portland, Oregon, born and bred. I'm representing the Borgen project. Today, it's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization operating out of Seattle, Washington. At the Borgen Project, we believe that the most powerful nation on earth should be doing more to address global poverty. And so our national campaign of volunteers and interns work to lobby Congress to pass laws that make global poverty and extreme poverty a focus of United States foreign policy. By extreme poverty, I mean they live on between $1.25 and $1.90 a day. In 2015, 702 million people were living in extreme poverty. That was only 5 years ago, but those numbers have come a long way. In 1990, there were 1.9 billion people in that situation. And in 2012, there were around 900 million people. So, you know, these kinds of initiatives do make a difference. So aside from the ethical argument that is our obligation to help others in need, we actually benefit from foreign aid in other countries by creating markets overseas. A good example is Boeing here in Oregon. At a certain point where people come from extreme poverty to a working poor situation to maybe a middle class situation where they're actually looking for technology that they can use in their homes, clothing, automobiles, and travel. So that would be the Boeing example. We benefit from these overseas markets. Additionally, it increases our national security, as some of the most dangerous countries on earth are also some of the poorest. Afghanistan, Iraq, Nigeria, Syria, etc. So while we can talk about these things all day, we actually don't have any authority to pass these laws, and so that is why we lobby Congress. At the Borgen Project Action Center at our website, which is www.borgenproject.org, we've got a couple of templates and ways that you can contact Congress and make it very easy. It takes less than 40 seconds to email your congressional representatives on our website. Calls and emails are put into a call log and given to these leaders regularly, and it only takes between 7 and 10 constituents to ask for support of a bill, typically for one of these leaders to go ahead and co-sponsor it. So really we're just looking to engage people, mobilize them, to educate themselves about these issues and their family members, and also to go on and get in touch with Congress and let them know what they think. That's all I've got for you guys today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Julian. We appreciate your being here to give us the introduction and the update, and we hope to hear from you again on progress. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next individual, please, Keelan, item number 952.
Request of Sarah Taylor to address council regarding Willamette Greenway inventory from a community perspective.
Good morning, Sarah.
Hi, my name is Sarah Taylor. I live in Linton on the Linton Neighborhood Association Board, as well as many of the river boards. I've been a Portland Public School principal, and as a licensed midwife, delivered thousands of babies in Portland. But I'm here today to talk to you about the Willamette Greenway inventory, which you were supposed to approve this afternoon. So that's why I'm talking to you this morning. I believe that it will, that it's very, very important that it be done right. So I'm going to have 4 points. One is that the community outreach was only to people who have businesses on the river. As you know, most of those are multinational corporations and oil tanks. And there was no outreach to neighborhood associations or to nonprofits in the area. So I want to ask that they go back and they do the proper outreach to the people who are most impacted by the lower Willamette River. Secondly, I'd like you to look at the culture and history inventory that's part of that, and note that it was done in 2005, and it was done by the industries, by the lower Willamette group. So it was paid for by industry and has not been updated. It totally excludes the voices of the tribes. It doesn't tell the stories of the indigenous immigrant communities. The Giles Lake community, which was almost as big as Vanport, is excluded. So I'm asking you to ask planning to go back in and redo the history and culture part of that inventory. Third, I think it's really important that you get some morphology maps, some river morphology maps that show the original lakes, the original streams, the river banks, the depth and width of the river. Because anyone who's doing planning and using this needs to know where there's infill and where it is dangerous to build. So I think that's a really important part of the inventory. I'm also asking that the Superfund, that there's another attachment that has the Superfund, that has earthquakes, fish viability, air quality, as well as forest fire and tank risk. So basically I'm asking for one attachment that shows those risks. All of these exist already, so nobody has to make anything new. All you have to do is to get city departments or to get the EPA to give you that stuff and just attach it. It may seem like this isn't very important, but as you know, Roosevelt High School is one of the most diverse, low-income schools in the city, and I believe that they have experienced multi-generational poverty because of their relationship with the lower Willamette River. So I am talking to you about an inventory and maps, but I am doing this because I think without an accurate inventory, we will continue to harm people in North Portland and the whole city and state. I think that's my time. All right. Does anybody have any questions?
No, Sarah, Ted here. I want to thank you for your testimony, and I'll be honest, I'm very surprised to hear about the lack of engagement. It was my understanding that tribes were definitely part of the public engagement process, but clearly there's a gap here. So I appreciate your testimony, and it's definitely something that the Bureau will look into, and I've got one of my staffers who's engaged in this taking notes and hearing your testimony. So I just want to acknowledge that and appreciate your being here today.
Well,
thank you.
I want to clarify that we are working with planning, and I didn't just come to you without going to them first. So just want to make sure you know that I've said this to them. And So you're getting presented with the Willamette inventory and the South Reach.
Right.
Now, my understanding is the South Reach was very well outreached. So, and they did engage with tribes. So the inventory of the Greenway is different than the South Reach.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So you're being more specific in terms of that particular piece.
Of the whole inventory, not okay. The South Reach, I'm sure they did a great job with. Okay. So I'm okay. Just talking about the whole thing. Okay.
That's helpful.
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, and before we don't go yet, I see Commissioner Hardesty might have a question as well.
Okay.
I just wanted to say thank you, Sarah. And I think this afternoon we will hear much more about the extensive outreach that was conducted before bringing this plan to the city council. So I appreciate your testimony, but I would not frame it as no outreach. There may be people who feel like their input wasn't recorded appropriately, but I do know that there was extensive outreach that took place. So I look forward to us having that conversation this afternoon.
But just remember, it was outreach for the South Reach.
I do understand what you're saying.
Okay.
I just want to put on a record that I know the Bureau did extensive outreach, and we have time set aside this afternoon for that conversation. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Ryan.
Oh, thanks, Mayor. Yeah, I just wanted to briefly acknowledge that Sarah joined us this morning. I'm a real big fan of hers for the founding of the Sunnyside Middle School, well, Sunnyside School in general now. And I also appreciate your comments about being a Roosevelt alum. I do appreciate your comments, and I know we'll be doing much more digging into that as we start focusing on the North Reach. So
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Good. Everybody good?
We're going to let you go now, Sarah. This is the peril of testifying here is we don't let you go.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
Uh-huh.
Next up is the consent agenda. Keelan, have any items been pulled off of the consent agenda?
No, we've had no requests.
Why don't we go ahead and call the roll, please?
You, Daly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. We will go to the first time certain item, please. That is item number 953, Travel Portland.
Accept Travel Portland's annual report on travel and tourism activity for fiscal year 2019-20.
Many people in Portland may not fully appreciate how important the travel and tourism industry is to Portland's economy. In 2019, the industry generated over $5 billion in direct spending in our metropolitan region and supported almost 37,000 jobs. Unfortunately, as we all know, the industry has been one of the hardest hit as a result of the COVID crisis and its resulting economic downturn. We've seen tourism, conventions, and major events not only slowed but stopped completely since the shutdowns began in March. I'm very much looking forward to this report and hearing what the state of the industry is and the plans for recovery of the travel and tourism and convention industry in 2021. And with that, I'm very pleased to introduce one of the hardest working teams in our city, Jeff Miller, President and CEO of Travel Portland, to present the agency's annual report on travel and tourism activity for the fiscal year 2019 and 2020. And it's my understanding that Jeff is joined by his colleagues, Megan Conway, who's the Chief Strategy Officer, as well as James Jesse, who is the Chief Sales Officer. Welcome, and thank you for your presentation today.
Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners, thank you so much for your time today. I'm used to reporting more upbeat results, but as you know, and as you've just heard, tourism and hospitality has been the hardest hit sector. I'll give my short overview, then turn it over to James and Megan, who will take you through what we are working on for the future. We laid off 40% of our staff, took a few more employees to part-time, and instituted pay adjustments for remaining staff. My goal for the future is twofold: maintain the remaining staff till recovery begins, and to focus all of our energy on creating hotel and short-term rental room nights. Our funding is from the transient lodging tax and tourism improvement district fee on hotels. Both are down 85% with no quick recovery in sight. As I'm sure you're aware of the hit to the city's portion of the lodging tax and the general fund. That said, I remain optimistic for recovery with a few signs of hope on the horizon. Dean Runyon is a travel and tourism research firm based here in Portland, and they've done the economic impact of tourism study for us and Travel Oregon for many years. These numbers are for the three county region, and the mayor spoke to some of these. I did choose 2011 as the base year since the TID, the Tourism Improvement District, was formed that year. You can see the massive increase in spending, earnings, but most importantly, the jobs. And that's what we're all about, is creating those incremental jobs.
Hey, Jeff, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I just make sure you don't have a PowerPoint going right now, do you?
I see it on my screen.
Am I the only one who can't see it? Dan, can you see it?
I see it.
Why don't I see it? All I see is a blue background. That's not fair.
Change your view, Mayor.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do something different here.
Reduce the view.
Okay, keep going and I'll figure it out. Oh, I found it. Okay. Technological idiot. I got it. Switch. Thank you, Commissioner Udaly. You get the extra credit today. Sorry, Jeff. Go ahead.
No problem. When we talk about the incremental jobs, an example of that would be a restaurant with, say, 10 employees that, were it not for tourism, would have less employees. So these are incremental jobs over and above what would happen without tourism. I also don't want to skip that the fact that we create a lot of taxes both locally and at the state level. I'll go through very briefly some of the hotel performance measures. You'll see rooms sold. Over the course of this year, we've been devastated in the number of rooms sold, down 61% in October. Average daily rate, you can see we were at $99. And I can tell you on both of these statistics, all of these statistics, it will be worse in November and December and likely January with the lockdown. When you look at revenue, which is what the taxes are measured on, and on this slide, we were down 75.5% in October, and the central city was down 83.6%. I just saw the statistics for last week, and the central city was down 89% in revenue, a total of $700,000 out of our central city hotels, and there are seven of them still closed. Accommodations and food service lost more jobs than any other sector in March and April. More than half, or 97,300 jobs, or 54% of all accommodation and food service jobs statewide were either temporarily idled or permanently lost in a shorter time. As of September, 64,300 jobs had been added back, leaving the sector 33,000 jobs below the February employment number. Multnomah County has struggled more in gaining back jobs. A little more than one-third, or 9,800 of the 26,600 jobs lost in March and April were regained by September. Our efforts at Travel Portland to restart the tourism economy are now more important than ever. It's all about the jobs that we need to recreate. And with that, I'll now turn it over to James Jesse, our Chief Sales Officer.
Thank you, Jeff. As Jeff detailed the drastic decline in business levels for hotels, this slide details how these devastating effects manifested itself with direct convention and meeting losses as a result of the pandemic. As shown on the left-hand side of the slide, business cancellations have affected all segments across the board for large and small meetings. And as shown on the right side of the slide, it details the consistent losses by month and all the way into the years 2021 and 2022. With the onset of the pandemic, it was critical that the local meetings industry addressed the new requirements of social distancing and public health that would change the face of meetings in the short term. The initial work of the Meeting and Convention Recovery Task Force centered on the primary components of safely reopening the Oregon Convention Center and establishing a baseline of public health and safety certifications from the hotel and venue community. Task Force members included a wide range of partners from the hotel and venue community to ensure that the local industry will be prepared for a reopening once it's deemed safe to return to hosting meetings. Additionally, addressing the visitor journey throughout all the major local touchpoints for meeting attendees Involvement and consultation in the restaurant community was key with Orla, as well as our major transportation partners at Portland International Airport and Triton. One major achievement for Portland venues in the area of public health and safety is receiving certification from the Global Biorisk Advisory Council, or GBAC, STAR accreditation. GBAC is considered the gold industry standard in third-party validation and demonstrates that we have the work practices and protocols to prepare, respond, and recover from outbreaks and pandemics. The Hyatt Regency Hotel, the Portland Airport, and the Oregon Convention Center have achieved this accreditation, and through an EDA grant being pursued by Travel Portland, Merck, and the Oregon Convention Center, if awarded, this GBAC accreditation application will be made available to all Portland hotels and venues. This effort goes a long way in adding another protective layer of safety as we work to build confidence in our clients that Portland offers a safe environment for meetings in the future. In plain terms, convention and meeting sales face three concurrent crises: the health crisis of COVID-19 that's caused immediate business loss, the economic crisis and the restrictions barring reopening, and social and destination perception issues resulting from continuous coverage of political violence. In order to acutely move forward, Travel Portland recognizes the need to fully delve into these crises and how they relate to Portland specifically. And to that end, we've engaged focus groups for in-depth qualitative research that will provide a baseline of perception of Portland as a host for future events. Through our initial work, three primary themes emerged that provide some direction in our work moving forward to prepare for reopening.
Good morning, Mayor.
Most prominent were concerned with short-term delegate safety, and specifically,
Jody, could you put your mic on mute, please? We can hear you. Thank you. Sorry about that, Jen.
No problem. Thank you. Next, and more on the positive side, the Portland story and the Portland overall brand still remaining strong. Our fans are still our fans. And lastly, the positive long-term view of meeting in Portland, where the general consensus is that current events won't necessarily prevent meeting planners from considering Portland for future events. The results of this research will inform how we move forward with marketing campaign work and our sales strategy. Looking forward to convention sales, this next slide, while it's undeniable, over the past 7 months has been very devastating for the local convention and meetings market, we remain very optimistic about the future as a long-term booking outlook is positive due to successes over the last few years in advanced convention bookings. As shown here, while 2023 is shaping up to be one of the most impressive years for total hotel rooms booked, all years provide a great level of base business to build group compression and economic impact throughout the city of Portland. In an effort to assist our hotels and venues with replacing business losses as a result of the pandemic, Travel Portland created this short-term When We Meet Again business promotion for prospective business in years 2020 through 2022. This promotion serves two purposes. It combines our business incentives with those provided by our hotels to create competitive packages for new business. And also, it assists our hotels with mitigating some of the losses of existing convention business. This promotion is key in our short-term business recovery efforts and will continue through the end of calendar year 2021. This promotion has provided some short and long-term wins for the local community. In our first instance, the Vancouver Whitecaps made Portland and Providence Park its home for the remainder of the 2020 MLS season. And through a great collaboration between Travel Portland, the Portland Timbers, and Sport Oregon, Portland was able to land this opportunity, with the local host being the Portland Hilton Downtown. This booking alone allowed the Hilton to partially reopen and bring 30 employees back to work. And I referenced earlier in my presentation regarding the positive outlook for future years, Travel Portland sales team has also garnered these two large convention opportunities for the future at Oregon Convention Center and our local hotels, proving that our long-term prospects and the group confidence in Portland for future years remains intact. We will continue to work in partnership with all of our local visitor industry partners on these new future opportunities. And although Portland was not chosen as a host for the 2025 Women's Final Four, Portland was on the receiving end of two future NCAA tournament events with the rewarding of the Women's Regional Basketball Tournament in 2024 and the Men's Basketball First Round Tournament in 2026. And ending on a very positive note, Travel Portland has also continued our steadfast work in promoting our efforts in diversity, equity, and inclusion with our annual diversity event. This event is designed to showcase Portland's diverse makers, talent, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs, and to highlight how Travel Portland is engaging and supporting local communities of color. This year's event, held virtually and through the theme, What's Going On, participants received a glimpse of what's happening in Portland now through recorded segments and live conversations with local Black artists, business leaders, and community leaders. Here's a sampling of the community leaders that offered their perspective on the future of Portland and the local impacts of communities of color. And also, through interactive sessions, participants were able to get up close and personal with Bertoni Faustin and Chauncey King to hear stories of success as local business diverse owners and entrepreneurs. And I wish I had an additional 30 minutes in this presentation to show you the awesome performance by local saxophone artist Michael Phillips. Filmed at the Jupiter Hotel Virtual Studio, our guests were treated to a world-class virtual concert featuring Michael and various Portland musicians from the comfort of their couches and office desks. Travel Portland will continue leading our stewardship efforts of showcasing our various talents, as well as making the opportunities within tourism available to all. This concludes my presentation on the convention sales efforts. I welcome any questions or comments during the Q&A, and now I'll turn it over to Megan Conway, our Chief Strategy Officer. Thank you.
Thank you, James. When faced with the realities of the pandemic, we quickly shifted our messaging from out of market to local, and we saw early the critical need to support our Portland economy. Our research shows that culinary offerings are a proven driver of overnight visits. Early in the pandemic, we prioritized support for Portland's restaurants, food carts, and markets through PDX To Go. And we built on that success with reopening PDX to highlight attractions, museums, and shops. With the current pause, we're putting additional dollars behind PDX To Go and will again support reopening efforts when appropriate. In a huge win for the city, we secured Top Chef to film its 18th season in Portland. This showcase of our destination communicates Portland's position as a mainstay on the national culinary scene. The show utilized more than 7,000 room nights in the city, hired more than 40 local crew, and the season will air in the spring of 2021, giving Portland an edge when many destinations will return to tourism marketing. This project would not have been possible without the support of the Portland and Oregon film offices, Travel Oregon, our regional tourism partners, and the City of Portland. Also, in October, we launched a food cart finder. This searchable directory lets visitors and locals discover the ever-changing scene by pod, cuisine, trademark, dishes, and dietary needs. Additionally, food carts reflect the Portland experience we want to celebrate, nurture, and protect. They're the embodiment of Portland's creative collaborative DNA. They represent business opportunities for entrepreneurs of color in every corner of the city, and they serve as incubators for future brick and mortar restaurants. While our local focus has been a benefit to our partners and to the Portland economy, we have not taken our eye off of the tourism promotion work we are best known for. We have long used data to inform our marketing strategies, and this year is no different. In the face of COVID, many of us speak in terms of gating events. We have applied a tourism lens to these standards in order to layer in consumer sentiment and travel readiness into the equation. Ultimately, there is a lot that's up to the consumer. If people don't feel safe traveling, eating out in restaurants, or shopping in stores, they won't. Reopening is not synonymous with recovery. Regarding Portland-specific data, I'll touch on the results of our National Perception Audit Survey, and I also will share details on our consumer marketing work for both the short and the long term. We fielded this survey to 1,250 Americans on October 1st. Respondents are from the general population, so they may or may not have been to Portland before and may or may not be frequent travelers. We field this survey quarterly, but you will not see results from Q2 or Q3 of 2020 when we pause this work. Here, you will see, not surprisingly, that the percentage of respondents who had seen Portland in the news skyrocketed from previous surveys. Building on the fact that more people have seen Portland in the news, the survey clearly reports that most Portland coverage in recent months has been perceived as negative. Next, we wanted to understand what effect this coverage had on the likelihood of people to visit Portland. Clearly, more likely to visit took a bit of a hit. However, the most important data point, it's not on this slide. If you add those who are more likely and less likely, you get about 50%, which means half of those surveyed were not influenced by the coverage. Here we see a bit of a decline in those who said Portland is appealing, but the Q4 number is down less than you might think when you compare it to early 2019. We then asked how much people agree with the statement, Portland is a safe destination. Again, we saw a decline, but not as great as you might think. Again, here we see a drop, but also not too far below the Q2 2019 number. And lastly, to share the most uplifting finding, we asked respondents who had visited Portland previously if they were likely to visit again. The response wasn't surprising to us because we know that when people visit Portland, they just get it. And most importantly, they want to come back again to be part of what they fell for the first time around. Our role is to build consumer interest in Portland as an overnight travel destination. In the current climate, one of our most critical jobs is to be ready to drive demand when the regional, national, and international marketplaces reopen. Promoting travel and securing overnight stays that rebuild a steady level of lodging tax collections is critical to Portland's recovery as the economic engine for our region and our state. One way we'll do this is through our consumer marketing. On the left, you'll see plans for regional drive markets this winter. We'll raise awareness through public relations, which has been extremely successful in the past, as well as paid social efforts. We'll partner with online travel agencies that can inspire, book, and report overnight stays, and we'll promote our COVID safety pledge to help inspire consumer confidence. Come spring, if gating events are cleared, and with Top Chef setting a nice groundwork for us in what will be a very competitive landscape, we drive overnight visitation through a West Coast campaign. And if the market isn't ready, all of this can be modified to meet the current conditions. As we know, our small businesses need help. Focusing on the tax-free shopping that has long been a lure for visitors, we've collaborated with Prosper Portland, the Portland Business Alliance, Bricks Need Mortar, and others to encourage locals and our visitor audiences to buy Portland products. Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Hardesty, you were both on a call recently where these initiatives and partnerships were highlighted, and Travel Portland is proud to be part of the push to spend local. Recognizing that every Portland neighborhood has its personality, each of which is critical to the spirit of this city, we shine a light on small businesses from every quadrant. We also remain engaged as a founding partner of My People's Market, which is currently part of the Built Oregon online marketplace. Each year, Travel Portland has advanced our commitments to diversity, equity, and inclusion. One priority has been showcasing the stories of our diverse communities by elevating the voices of people within these communities to tell their own stories as contributors to our magazine and our web content, our photography collections, and as Portland spokespeople in our media pitching and hosting efforts. While we're proud of our commitments, we know there's more work to be done, and we're here to build on our efforts while also supporting the need to create equal opportunity in the larger tourism industry. We take seriously and with great pride our role as promoter and steward of this amazing city we are so fortunate to call home. Our role in destination marketing has expanded over the years to incorporate destination management, and we continue to lend our voice and human capacity to initiatives that ensure our city will be ready for visitors when a true reopening is viable. This includes upholding our founding member commitments to Portland Means Progress to ensure equal opportunity for all Portlanders, the ongoing work of our Community Action Committee, support for community organizations through volunteer hours and sponsorship, the amplification of recovery funding and support opportunities for hospitality businesses, and serving as the hospitality sector representative on policy task forces that are dedicated to local, regional, and statewide recovery efforts. The challenges that lie ahead for our city are real. We at Travel Portland are here to work alongside our public and private sector partners to carve a path toward a better future for all Portlanders, and one that once again builds on the collaboration, character, and innovative spirit of this city. It's our personality that people fell for before, and the visitors will do it all over again if they see that all Portlanders have had a voice in how we rise. Thank you for your time, and we can now open it for questions.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That was a great report, very thorough. Some good news, some bad news, and a little bit of ugly mixed in as well. But I really appreciate the responsiveness that you have with the COVID crisis. There's a lot of innovation and creativity going on here. So thank you. Commissioner Hardesty, I see you have your hand raised.
Sorry, Mayor, it's left over from last time.
Oh, no worries. Anybody else have any questions? Dan, are you reaching for your unmute? I think you are.
Commissioner Daly, let's watch. I got caught trying to do that. I just want to thank all of you, Jeff Miller and your team, for this report. It was very enlightening. Also, I realized that you had some rearview mirror and then you had exactly what's happening right now. And so I thought you did a good balance with that. I'm interested a little bit more. And when you say that the survey said people felt unsafe, can you talk further about what they feel unsafe? Where did that come from? Was there any insights besides the data? Any qualitative comments?
There weren't specific qualitative comments. The news coverage obviously was overblown in some instances. And so what people saw not only around the country, but around the world were very small sections of the city. So I think that it's perceptions of the way the media showed Portland as opposed to all of Portland. That's my guess.
And then when you say our revenue streams are down 85%, how does that compare to similar markets, say Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or just some others around the country?
It's similar. We are, for an urban area, we are a little worse than some. What is happening is that the hospitality business is doing better in the more rural parts of the state, even in Oregon. And the more urban parts, people are a little more concerned about COVID. But we did see just yesterday some survey work that said people are interested in coming back to urban destinations now that there is hope of a vaccine. So we know when we rise, we will rise quickly.
Okay. And I just want to comment on how creative and adaptive your team has been with the sales promotions, the local market support. I really appreciate that, especially at this time of year. And anyway, thank you for adapting to the times. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Commissioner Udaly.
Hi, Jeff and Megan. Nice to see you. I just want to say that it's been a pleasure to work with you. James, sorry. And thank you for the report. As a former small business owner, it has been really devastating to watch what's happening to our small business community. And I've fought really hard for them throughout this crisis. I'm still deeply concerned what the landscape is going to look like coming out. I did want to comment on the portion of the report pertaining to people outside of Portland's impressions of Portland and just say that there are conditions in the city that make it hard for people to live and survive here. They're not taking vacations. They're just trying to exist. And so I would just ask for your continued support and partnership in helping us solve the problems that really impact our community members first and foremost, but then have the secondary impact of potentially negatively impacting tourism. Because we know that tourism is definitely a boon for the city, but there's ways in which it can exacerbate some of the issues that we're facing, especially around housing. So I know that you recognize that, and I just think it's vitally important that we all continue to put our heads together and come up with creative solutions for how to make the city better for its residents first and foremost, but also for our tourism industry. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I decided that I did want to make a comment. First, thank you very much for the report. It's always very informative. But I'm curious, I know that there are a couple of, you pointed to a couple of large conventions in 2023, 2024. I'm just wondering, as a industry, tourism is one of the ones that we believe will be the very last to come back. I think between large hotel stays and like large music events, I don't anticipate them coming back anytime soon. And I'm wondering just what internal changes are being made at conventions that will accommodate these safety measures that I suspect will be with us for quite some time. Right? Okay. I don't see 1,000 people in a room having a dinner anytime soon, as an example.
Yes, and thank you, Commissioner. What we've done was first in a pivot to small meetings. And this is a pivot that we've done here from a local industry standpoint to pivot to those meetings that could conform with the gathering size restrictions as we move through the governor's phases. Yes, there is restrictions on larger meetings right now, and we don't see a large return for those, possibly till sometime shortly after the vaccine. But we have seen some very promising instances here recently where we're seeing our groups, such as the two that we booked for future years, come out and start moving forward now, because that confidence has picked up that there will be an option for a vaccine probably within the coming year. So we do know that the short-term outlook is pretty difficult for us, and it's going to be filled with short-term meetings. We've also made a pivot recently of going back to more regional meetings, so it's not a lot of folks moving from outside the community so much. So yeah, we've made those changes here locally to conform to what the gathering sizes are. And what we've done is put together a strategy that as we move through the phases and we'll be able to accommodate larger meetings, that we'll be prepared to do so once we're deemed safe.
Thank you. And one last item, and I would love to have a copy of this report, so I hope you will share it with us after this presentation is over. But my one last question is really around, we have not seen the second wave of COVID yet. We are anticipating January, February is when we're going to be at the height of we keep thinking we can't go any higher as far as COVID-19 numbers, but we really will go a lot higher. And the only reason I think today that we don't have a better number is because, quite frankly, so few people have been tested. And so I hope that the public health directives are being incorporated into your thinking, both short-term and long-term, because we're not even close to being done with COVID yet. So as much as I like optimistic reports, I also like realistic reports that balance where we want to go with where what our reality is. So I appreciate all the info today and look forward to what's next. Thank you.
We are staying very close to Dr. Vines at Multnomah County, and we're paying very much attention to that. So thank you, Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate that.
Commissioner Daly.
Thank you, Mayor. This line of thinking generated another question for me. At PBOT, we've tried to support our local businesses by creatively repurposing the public right-of-way, as well as create space, safer space for Portlanders to get outside and exercise and play. I'm certainly interested if you have ideas, given that we don't know when this is going to end and we anticipate additional waves of COVID or other similar events in the future, ways that we can start creating spaces where people can safely do business. If you're looking at cities around the world, if you have any particular proposals to pitch. I'm leaving council, but I'm not leaving Portland, and this is one of the areas that I'm pretty deeply invested in supporting our local businesses. So I know that I've been keeping tabs on just interesting, creative, innovative ways that people have been able to continue doing business. And I'm wondering if you have a quick pitch, I don't know, a year-round outdoor market, drive-in concerts, any fun, interesting ideas?
I'll ask Megan to weigh in. I will tell you, I was downtown on Sunday doing my Christmas shopping in our small businesses, and I was really encouraged by the number of the outdoor pods to eat in and those sorts of things. So there's a lot of creativity going on. Megan?
Yeah, I think, thank you for the question, Commissioner. We really are very actively watching what other cities are doing. We had, you know, sort of routed around our office the design competition for outdoor eating spaces that the city of Chicago had. Looking at how can you capitalize on your creative class to come up with a solution that helps you combat not just, you know, needing to be outside, but the elements of needing to eat outside in a cold climate like that. So we definitely will continue to keep our eye out for ideas that either come up or are generated in our office to think about creative solutions and ways that we can collaborate. And we're in regular conversation with PBA and Prosper Portland and others as well. So as we look at those collaborative recovery efforts of driving locals into the community to spend dollars, if they're able, to be able to look at those opportunities to partner as well.
Great. I know I've been looking to Scandinavian countries who have much harsher winters and who just love the outdoors year round. So I think we need to get a little more Scandinavian in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, we need our layers.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Udaly. Anybody else? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved. I move the acceptance of the report as presented.
Second.
The motion from Commissioner Hardesty, a second from Commissioner Udaly. Any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, Keelan, please call the roll.
Udaly.
Well, thanks again for the report. I think I said most everything I need to say, but wow, what an extraordinary and unexpected year we've all been through. So thank you for your continued commitment to Portland and to our local business community, and I look forward to continuing to support your efforts however I'm able. I vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Jeff, James, and Megan for this report. As usual, it is clear, it is data-driven, it is succinct, and it's interesting. You do a really phenomenal job. Being the liaison to Travel Portland via the Visitor Development Fund board has been the only assignment that I have had for the entire 12 years in office. People who know me know that I don't do 8 o'clock meetings, never mind regular 8 o'clock meetings and meetings that I would describe as fascinating and ones that I look forward to. So it's a little known assignment, but it's so interesting to find out the planning that goes into, you know, the magic that happens when the conventions come to town. It's a years long effort. And I so appreciate having worked with you and learned from you. I also acknowledge what you said at the beginning of your report, that you had to lay off 40% of your staff and take salary reductions. That's hard, and you have phenomenal staff. You've done a really good job of recruiting and retaining people. So I'm sorry to hear that some of them are no longer with us, and I hope that the economy recovers. I'm actually more optimistic than some of my colleagues. Looking into retirement, my plan had been to be doing a lot of traveling and a lot of doing all kinds of fun things. I haven't had permission from my children for when I'm allowed to go gallivanting, but as soon as I get the vaccine, I'm going to be watching out for when can I start doing the traveling that I had planned to do. And I imagine that there's a lot of people who are just fed up of this whole isolation thing and just really want ready to get back to normal once it's safe to do so, and building back better. And so I appreciate that the work that you're doing with the local businesses, with Prosper, with the Portland Business Alliance, with Pioneer Courthouse Square. You are true collaborators, and especially one of the improvements in our system over the past several years has been adding the short-term rentals, and you mentioned that. The tax from that does benefit the system, and your inclusion of some of the short-term rental operators in your planning has been, I think, a great improvement. So thank you so much for your kindness to me, your support to me, your organization, just being very, very interesting and very, very good at what you do. I'm glad to vote aye.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Ryan.
Yes. Thank you again, Jeff, James, and Megan. It was a great report. I look forward to seeing the details. I also want to just make a comment that COVID has been challenging on every level, not to mention the mental health challenge that I think everyone is basically experiencing, if they're being honest. But there's no part of our economy that has been hit as hard as the hospitality industry. I think you did a really good job of giving us hope. But I also want to take a moment, like Commissioner Fritz mentioned, the sacrifices that your organization has taken and all of your partners. I also really appreciate that you brought up music industry. I don't think that's getting enough attention. It was great to see my dear friend, Mike Phillips, on your slideshow. And you know, we just really have to be there for all of you as we do build back. One could say that the revenue streams that we receive from this part of our economy, from our industry, is paramount in fueling the revenues that we need for many of the social services, progressive causes that the city cares about. So there's a direct relationship between these revenue streams, and we have to do all we can to be there for you as we get out of whatever, after we get out of this. And there is hope in the spring and summer that can begin. Anyway, I really appreciate you mentioning Portland's DNA. It is about our hospitality. It is about that vibe that people have when they come here. And when they came here pre-COVID, they felt that. And if they showed up today, they just wouldn't feel that same thing. But you're doing all you can to create that. So I'm with you with the hope. And I just want to acknowledge your sacrifice. And thank you for hanging in there. Thank you for your employees that are sacrificing pay cuts. And we need you. And I look forward to having further dialogue. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
Thank you for the report, Jeff, Megan, and James. It is, as always, a very thorough report, and I'm grateful for that. I just want to add that this is my own personal belief. I believe the world will be radically different coming out of this pandemic. And what I hope is that we're imagining what our new future will look like and not anticipating headed back to where we were prior to the pandemic. Our world has changed, and if we're going to recover, we're going to recover based on new thinking, new innovation, and new opportunities that will present themselves. And so I look forward to working with you to identify and support this new thinking. Life is not going to ever be the same again, and I don't want us to be planning as if we're going to go back to some fantasy world that honestly didn't exist for a lot of Portlanders before the pandemic. And the pandemic has shown us just how unequal our city really is. I look forward to the tourism return being more reflective of who we want to be rather than who we were or who we thought we were prior to the pandemic. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, there's no question that all of these important issues that my colleagues have raised are tied together. And the challenge that Commissioner Hardesty just put on the table, I think, is exactly the right one, which is let's look for the silver linings. Let's look for the innovations. There's a couple of things that I think have changed permanently. Number one, people do like eating outside. Maybe not on the coldest nights, but there's no question in my mind that last summer, the outdoor dining, the opportunity for people to gather in places that previously were neighborhood streets, some of the work that Commissioner Daly and PBOT had done around the festival streets, those were very successful. And even when the pandemic, they were driven by need during the pandemic, but I actually believe some of those ideas have stuck now, and people are looking forward to it, hope that next summer we have some of the same opportunities. There's going to be parts of our economy that will be fundamentally different, particularly the large scale gatherings, whether it's sports, whether it's entertainment, music, arts and cultural programming. Those industries are trying to reinvent themselves as we speak, and the City Council stands in alignment with them and will continue to work with them to innovate and be creative. But there are certain values that are inherent to Portland that Jeff, you and your team have highlighted in our marketing, both nationally and globally, about who Portlanders are. And I don't think who we are is going to change even because of the pandemic. We're going to continue to be innovative. We're going to continue to be creative. We're going to continue to be leaders. We are going to continue to appreciate small scale maker spaces, homemade products, mom and pop stores, as opposed to chains. We're going to continue to be a top culinary destination going forward. All of these things that sort of create the aura of Portland are truly important to attracting people here. And we should also be genuine. And I think Portland has had a bit of a comeuppance in recent years about some of the fragility of our community, some of the inequities that exist in our community, some of the structural problems, the lack of safety net services, housing, access to economic opportunity. All those things have come to the fore too. And I believe we will be a more genuine city going forward. But I want people to not just see problems as they look at Fox News or wherever. I want them to see a community that can acknowledge and own those problems and demonstrate that we're leaders enough, each and every one of us in this community, to address them. And I believe I have a lot of confidence in Portlanders. We're up to those challenges. And I hope some of that energy also becomes part of the way people view this city, that Portland is a can-do city, along with all those other things that we acknowledge. So I want to thank you for the critical work you do. Travel and tourism is a hallmark of our local economy. We're up against the ropes now, but you're showing real leadership in terms of addressing those challenges. We as a council stand with you and will continue to work with you and support your efforts. So thank you for the work you do. I vote aye. The report is adopted. Thank you, and we'll look forward to the next.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Next up is our next time certain, 954, please.
Direct the Portland Police Bureau to inventory its crowd control tools and submit written reports to council, and establish new authorization procedures for the Portland Police Bureau's acquisition and procurement of military style equipment and submit written reports to council.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, it was a pleasure to work with Commissioner Hardesty and her team and to co-sponsor this item with you and Commissioner Hardesty. When the demonstrations for racial justice began this spring following the murder of George Floyd, I immediately voiced my concerns with PPB's use of munitions and chemical munitions in particular during council session. I said then, and I will repeat today, that the use of these munitions during a public health crisis that attacks people's respiratory systems is inhumane. I worked with my team to determine what we could do as a council to restrict the PPB's use of munitions, and the resolution we will vote on today is the best next step we were able to identify. This year, beyond what we saw on the news and social media every night, council had little information on the tools the Bureau was using in response to demonstrations. This lack of information was also a challenge during budget conversations. Our own budget office was unable to estimate the cost and scope of PPB's munitions arsenal because it was not itemized within the Bureau's larger external material and services line item. This resolution will ensure that while Council continues to address inequitable policing practices, Council and the public will have additional transparency into what weapons are at the Bureau's disposal and what those weapons cost. I was pleased to work with Commissioner Hardesty on this issue from the outset and then to collaborate with the mayor's team to incorporate an aligned reporting resolution that they had been developing. We have staff from our offices here to present today. It's my pleasure to introduce my senior policy advisor, Hannah Holloway, to start us off. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I am Hannah Holloway, Senior Policy Advisor to Commissioner Udaly, and I'm here with Amanda Watson from the Mayor's team to present on this resolution. In sum, the resolution before you requires that PPB regularly report to Council on the contents of its crowd control munitions arsenal and sets different approval and reporting requirements for the Bureau's acquisition of military-style equipment. But this came together through a collaborative process between the offices, with different offices contributing different pieces, which we will elaborate on in this presentation. As you're aware, Black and Brown Portlanders have pointed to the injustices and excesses of our policing system for decades, with many in our community joining that call this past spring and summer. That movement itself called attention to another concerning aspect of policing, which is how they respond to democratic demonstrations and whether that response and the tools they're using are the best way to de-escalate confrontations. Since June, Portlanders have had questions about tear gas, rubber bullets, pepper spray, and more about their ingredients, health impacts, expiration dates, questions that city staff were not able to readily answer. As Commissioner Udaly mentioned, she was concerned about PPB's use of munitions, particularly chemical munitions during a public health crisis that affects respiratory systems. In addition to that, you'll remember that there were anecdotal and very concerning reports about oddities and regular protesters, hormone levels, reproductive systems, and more. And so it became clear that council and the city, Portlanders, really needed, at the very least, more information about these crowd control munitions. So we began working with city attorneys and shortly thereafter with Commissioner Hardesty's office and Derek Bradley to address these issues through council action. Of course, the city is still under the Department of Justice settlement agreement for PPB's use of excessive force against people experiencing mental illness, which does limit council's ability to make changes to use of force policies without DOJ approval. And while in the best of circumstances, a settlement like this is positive to the city, compelling our public police force to adopt better practices and to police more equitably, it has been a challenge in a year in which protesters are demanding swift change. And we're working with an agency that works at a different pace. I know you all know this, but I do think it's relevant background to how we arrived at this resolution as something that is within council's authority per the PPB settlement and is still responsive to community demands for more transparency. So, the resolution. In practice, the inventory piece of this resolution will require that PPB inventory its munitions used for crowd control purposes. And you'll see that in Exhibit A, we list out which munitions are subject to quarterly inventory reporting. That includes chemical irritants, impact munitions, distraction devices, and smoke or obscurants primarily. That's for a reason. This resolution is not intended to capture batons or bicycles, really the supplies that officers use in crowds. This inventory report is targeted to the weapons, the munitions, that PPB uses to control crowds when they feel that they've gotten out of order. So the first report should be submitted to council on January 27th, and from that date forward, quarterly. And it must include the quantity and use of each munition, as well as the ingredient list and expiration date for chemical munitions. It also provides a more responsive transparency if we find ourselves in events that are similar to that of this year, where there is more frequent and repeated deployment of crowd control munitions. So under this resolution, if PPB uses crowd control munitions 3 or more days within any 7-day period, the Bureau must record the munitions used in response and notice council of its intent to purchase additional munitions. That report under this sort of more frequent standard would have to come to council within 5 days of the initial munition deployment and continue on a weekly basis for the duration of heightened use. and that timely info to the city and to the public if there's a situation in which the size of the arsenal and the contents of this arsenal might be changing rapidly and members of the public, city staff, the council will want to know about fluctuations that are happening in a short time period. So that is really the totality of the crowd control inventory report aspect of this resolution. But we were happy to work with the mayor's office to combine certain synergistic efforts around the crowd control piece and military weapons that the mayor's office had been working on. And I want to let Amanda Watson, who's here, describe those provisions and what they mean within the context of this resolution. So I will kick it over to Amanda.
Thank you, Hannah. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Amanda Watson. I'm a Senior Policy Advisor for Mayor Wheeler. As Hannah mentioned, over the summer and fall, our office had been working with the Police Bureau on a policy related to acquisition of military-style equipment that's part of the Mayor's 19-point plan for public safety reform. And again, as mentioned, because of the similar goals and timing, we really welcome the opportunity to incorporate that work into the resolution that Commissioner E. Daly was bringing forward in cooperation with Commissioner Hardesty. So the goal of our particular piece of this policy reform was to increase transparency, accountability, and oversight over the purchase of military-style equipment by the Police Bureau for many of the same reasons that Hannah just mentioned in response to community demands for increased transparency, and because we know that the use of military-style equipment for crowd control can undermine trust with the community and poses greater risk to public safety if it's misused. So this portion of the resolution is a policy reform that requires the Bureau to receive prior authorization from City Council to purchase military-style equipment through a report to Council on a quarterly basis. The starting point for our policy was Executive Order 13688 that was issued by President Barack Obama in January 2015. This executive order aimed to standardize the procedures for transfer of military and military-style equipment from the federal government to local law enforcement agencies. And we relied on this, wanted our policy reform to be consistent with this executive order because it established a standard definition of military-style equipment, and it set reporting requirements for agencies that we're seeking to acquire that equipment from the federal government. And so, as we all know, the Portland Police Bureau does not purchase any surplus military equipment from the federal government, but we use those equipment lists and the reporting requirements from the executive order as a starting point for our policy, again, for consistency's sake. So we worked with Bureau staff from PPB's Businesses Services Group and the Training and Operations Division to create a policy that would minimize administrative burden while significantly increasing transparency and accountability. So the quarterly report to council that will be required by this policy will include details on the cost and the type of equipment the Bureau is seeking authorization to purchase in the coming quarter, as well as information on the appropriate law enforcement purpose that equipment will serve, and importantly, the policies, protocols, and trainings that the Bureau has in place governing the use of that equipment, so that, you know, council and the public will know that we have all the protocols in place for the proper and safe use of the equipment. So again, I just wanna thank Hannah and Derek, Commissioner E. Daly and Commissioner Hardesty's office and PPB staff for their collaboration on this policy. It was really great to kind of be able to bring this all together in one resolution that given the kind of alignment and goals as well as the reporting mechanism and the quarterly cadence. Thank you. I think we'll turn over if there's any questions, and I believe we have folks from the city attorney's office on the line who worked with us in the policy, if there's any questions from that perspective as well.
All right, colleagues, any questions for any of our presenters or any legal questions that our CRAC legal team could answer?
Mayor, I actually do have a question, and I think maybe the lawyers could answer this question. Our resolution is focused on purchase. Are there incidents where the military gives military-grade equipment to law enforcement agencies? And if so, would it be covered by this resolution? I think that's a legal question, maybe.
Do we have somebody on the line who could answer that?
Rebecca's boss from the attorney's office is here.
Yes, I believe I successfully unmuted myself.
There you go.
As a senior deputy city attorney with the city attorney's office. Commissioner Hardesty, I believe your question is of a legal nature. The resolution should cover acquisition and procurement no matter what form it takes place. So whether or not it is transferred or acquired through city funds or grant funds, this resolution will apply to all of that.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to make sure there was no wiggle room around this resolution. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other questions at this point? If not, I know we have some public testimony. Keelan, why don't we move to public testimony? How many people do we have signed up?
It looks like we have three people on the call to testify. First up is Dan Handelman.
Mr. Handelman, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. This is Dan Handelman. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm the Portland Cop Watch, and I'm not sure why there's echoing going on. I'm concerned about this resolution because I don't think it goes far enough. I think there really should be more restrictions on the use of these weapons. I do not understand the comment that this it would be a violation or somehow affect the DOJ agreement if you did restrict the use of weapons. I've read that agreement many, many times backwards and forwards. It doesn't say anything about forcing officers to use these weapons on protesters. And just because the directives allow the officers to use them, in the same way there's been a moratorium on the death penalty in Oregon since 1998, we haven't used it in the state. You could have a thing that says you're allowed to use it, but then you can also say we don't want you using it. So I don't really understand why you can't stop the officers from using these weapons. And I say weapons, the resolution refers to them as tools. I have said this over and over again, both to the Bureau and to the City Council, but it's really, Commissioner Udaly appropriately called them weapons in her opening remarks. And I think that should be remembered, that these are not things that you use to open paint cans or repair doors. These are things that are used to harm people. We also think that there should be more focus on removing them from the inventory than taking inventory. Rather than allowing more purchases of these things, just say, well, we don't want our community members being hurt by them. In the section about permissible items for the Bureau to buy, it lists helicopters and drones. I think those should also not be allowed to be bought by the Police Bureau. Portland hasn't had helicopters in decades, in part because of the perception that they give an occupying army flying over certain populations, particularly communities of color. And I don't think that those even should be on the list of permissible items. They should be banned. And then the data that the Bureau released about use of force from late May to the end of September showed that PPB used impact rounds 1,538 times, which is one quarter of all the force of the protests. They used chemical agents 854 times and baton strikes 216 times. It's clear that when you give these officers weapons, they're going to use them. I'd also just like to see in this particular resolution and in future resolutions around police issues, the addition of a requirement that when these reports come to council, that there be public testimony allowed, because we don't want to have a presiding officer who arbitrarily says we're never going to take public comments on any items that are reports when there's items that are very important to the community. So if it can be put into the resolution that whenever these reports come forward, there's going to be public testimony, I think that would be really benefit the transparency and the openness that this council has said over the years that they believe in. In terms of the cost, somebody brought up the question of the cost. The Oregonian reported that just in the first month and a half, the Bureau spent $117,500. Now, okay, I just want to say that if the council didn't get that information, the Oregonian did, that's very confusing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Commissioner Daly.
Thank you. Dan, I just wanted to briefly address your comments, although I think I'll be hitting on some of your concerns in my closing remarks. We originally set out to create munitions ban and or restrictions. I'm not sure what I can and can't share with you, but I will try to nutshell the challenge we faced with actual restrictions. And that is, with the DOJ settlement, if we take away less lethal munitions and what the police are left with are options that would be more harmful to community members, then we would be in violation of that settlement. I believe that we need to get out of the settlement, lay that to rest, and then revisit this issue. This is something that Commissioner Hardesty and I are both very passionate about. And if we had been able to advance something that included bans and or restrictions, we definitely would have. So as always, I really appreciate your insight and your testimony. I always learn something from you. I just want to assure you that this is what we can do in this moment, working with the constraints that are put upon us by not just the settlement, but state and probably federal law as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Oops. Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Udaly. I appreciate that.
Next up, we have Allison Cole.
Can you hear me? Am I unmuted?
Yeah, you sound good, Allison.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, my name is Allison Cole. I'm the administrator for a group of community organizations looking to demilitarize the Portland police. I've emailed all of your offices. Some of you haven't gotten back to me yet. It's been 2 months on some of your offices, to be honest. I know that with the COVID crisis, everyone is really busy, but I would love for you to search for my emails in your staff inboxes. I understand that this is an inventory and reporting tool exclusively and not a munitions ban, but I would really like to urge each of you, especially those of you carrying on into the next session, to really take on a comprehensive munitions ban. And I appreciate Hannah clarifying and also Commissioner Udaly clarifying a little bit the difficulties with the DOJ settlement between the city and the police. I think that the public really does deserve a very clear explanation of the limitations of that in this moment, because it's not well understood by the general public and people looking for police reform. And so if there's any way that you can make some sort of information session about it available to the public, that would be really helpful to set some expectations. I also do not believe that there's actually any legal precedent for police needing to take more dangerous firearms to protests if their less lethal munitions are taken away. That's a threat made by police and it's a policy perspective, but I do not believe it holds any grounds legal-wise. So I'm not actually sure why that police given by law enforcement agencies carries so much weight. I feel really confused by it. And so it would be wonderful to get some clarification on why they're allowed to take that stance. But what I really want to discuss with you very quickly, or at least encourage your policy advisors for all of your staff to do, is to really look into the empirical studies of police militarization. There is an enormous amount of research being conducted all across the country on the effects of material and cultural militarization on law enforcement agencies. I've collected a huge amount of it, and I would be more than happy to share it with you. Commissioner Ryan, I've shared it with a few of your staff members, and Commissioner Hardesty, I've shared it with Derek Bradley in your office as well. One of the main takeaways from this huge body of research is that militarization in all forms increases civilian deaths in police community interactions. So people in your community are more likely to die if your police and sheriff's offices have more military equipment and also military training. So that goes for transfers from the 1033 program, Department of Homeland Security grants to purchase equipment, private purchases from weapons dealers, and also if you have a SWAT team, like in Portland, we have CERT, with the county, we have the RRT.
just having that team increases the likelihood of deaths to go up. And the more often those teams are deployed, the more deaths you see. And this is all basic statistical regression modeling. It's not presumptive, it's real data. I wanna bring up one more concern and then I'll cede my time. I'm worried that there was a comment made by someone in this meeting that the Portland Police Bureau does not receive equipment from the 1033 program or is not engaged in federal military equipment transfers. The Marshall Project reported that the Portland Police Bureau has 44 assault and sniper rifles that came to them through the 1033 program. All 1033 program data is posted for free online on GitHub. The Washington Post did a huge Freedom of Information Act, and they posted all of it for free on the web. That information is easily available. So I am concerned to hear that you believe that the Portland Police Bureau does not engage and interact with that program, because they do. That is all for me today. I would really love to speak with all of your offices more. I represent a large coalition of groups, and there's many members in this group that would really love to have your ears. Thank you.
Thank you, Allison.
Next up, we have Andrew Riley.
Welcome.
Hi, good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Portland City Council. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, you sound good.
Great. For the record, my name is Andrew Riley. My pronouns are they and them, and I'm here today on behalf of Unite Oregon to urge you to pass Resolution 954. I also echo the feedback that Portland Cop Watch and Allison Cole have just provided about ways to strengthen the resolution. For 6 months and counting, Portland police have engaged in horrific violence against the many thousands of people who have risen up in support of Black Lives and many others who simply happened to be in what the police bureau deemed to be the wrong place and time. They've used an incredible array of weaponry to do so. Chemical weapons, rubber, wooden, and chemical bullets, flashbang grenades, and the sonic weapon known as the LRAD, just to name a few. And while we've seen image after image of police deploying these weapons indiscriminately on our streets, we really have no idea the full extent of their use of such weapons nor the size of their stockpiles. I want to do something I don't often do in this testimony and speak personally for a moment. I have been permanently physically altered by the Portland police and their use of crowd control weapons this year. I suffer from daily chronic lower back pain after being shot in the spine with a baton round in July. I'm still unsteady on my feet after receiving a second degree burn and severe bruising on my right foot from a flashbang grenade detonated next to me in August. My lungs have suffered from repeated tear gas exposure. Truthfully, I lost count after the first dozen gassings. And because I live near the East Precinct, some of that has come from simply walking around my neighborhood after police bathed our streets in chemical weapons. But worse still are the lingering questions I ask myself every day. What is this doing to my body in the long term? Am I at a higher risk for cancer or other illness as a result of exposure to these weapons? What are the police putting into our bodies, our waterways, and our ecosystem? Until today, it was very hard to know the answers to those questions with any certainty because the police bureau has not been forthcoming with that information. Activists have done incredible community-based research work to index all of the munitions that they've seen used and even test the soil and water in affected areas. But the onus should not be on the public to figure this out. We have a right to know what kind of weapons the Portland police are stockpiling to use against us in the event that we demonstrate in a manner deemed inappropriate, and we have a right to know what kinds of chemicals we're being exposed to, including the long-term health effects they may have on us, including and especially the parents who have seen their children gassed in their homes over the course of this uprising. This resolution is an important first step in establishing that right to know. For the first time, Portland police will be required to tell us what sort of weapons they have on hand, what they're made of, and report regularly, including in periods of sustained use, when they use them against the public in a sustained way. While Unite Oregon continues to advocate that City Council take the step of outright banning the acquisition and use of these chemical and ballistic crowd control munitions, we support this resolution as a step along the way. Thank you to Commissioners Udaly and Hardesty for bringing this forward, and I want to give a special thanks to Hannah Holloway and Commissioner Udaly's office for her excellent work in developing this resolution, including soliciting extensive feedback from community groups like ours. Please vote yes, Black Lives Matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all that we have signed up for testimony, Mayor.
All right, very good. Colleagues, any further questions? Commissioner Udaly, I see you have your hand raised.
No, sorry, Mayor.
Okay, very good. Keelan, please call the roll.
Udaly.
All right. In 1925, the Geneva Protocol banned the military use of tear gas. As a community, we need to ask ourselves, why have we allowed public servants to use a weapon our military cannot use in war against our own community members? The militarization of local law enforcement is harmful to every member of society and it needs to end. Council action alone cannot address the full scope of munitions use, but what we can do today is provide additional clarity for the public and for council into what munitions the Bureau has, how they use them, how much they spend, and how their arsenal affects demonstrators. I regret that I was not able to do more during my time in office to curb PPB's excesses. There are both regulatory and political reasons for why we can't do more right now, but the very least we can do is create more transparent and open information for members of the public, and I'm proud to provide that for Portland today. So thank you, Mayor, for your support and collaboration on the military-style equipment aspects of this resolution. Transparency should be universally valued on this council, and I'm thankful that on that front we found common ground. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. I'm disappointed that this is the last police-related action we will see across the finish line together as commissioners, but I know you will keep fighting for Portland, as will I, and I appreciate your partnership and honor your leadership on this issue over the last three decades. I want to thank your policy director, Derek Bradley, for working with my team since June to meet community demands and rethink public safety in our city. Although we have had to, we have been frustrated by the constraints within which we're forced to work. Thank you to my senior policy advisor, Hannah Holloway. Hannah has worked with community advocates and the city attorney since early June to accomplish community demands that weren't preempted by settlement agreements, pending lawsuits, or state legislative developments. I'm incredibly proud of the work you've done in my office. In addition to your work with the Urban League and your longstanding commitments to racial justice, and you deserve so much credit for the step we are taking today. I can't wait to see what you do next. A reporting resolution wasn't my end goal, and I know it's not everything our community wants, but this is a meaningful step forward for transparency, justice, and policing, and another tool in the public's arsenal for holding the Portland Police Bureau accountable. Thank you, everyone. I vote aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for your leadership on this issue and your persistence with it. And indeed, it is a very important step forward in transparency and accountability, which, of course, are part of our city's core values. I truly appreciate the three co-sponsors of this measure working together to come up with something that has universal support. It's an important step forward, and often we get to the next step by taking the first one, and this is a very, very good first step. I'm pleased to support it. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Udaly, and specifically Hannah Holloway. Holloway, your presentation was really thorough and so helpful. I know our staff, my staff has been working with all of you, and in the testimony we received today from some of the, from Allison particularly, it's very helpful to know this is a step, and it's a step in the right direction. We must demilitarize our police, and I'm really grateful to be with a team of five that is united on that front, and here's taking steps in the right direction. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
Thank you very much. I want to start by thanking Commissioner Udaly and Hannah Holloway. Your office was a joy to work with on this issue. We shared joy and frustration as we were pulling this resolution together, because as the public has said, it is not all that we want, but I do believe it is a strong first step. I want to say that also, based on, we heard a request that the public doesn't understand our limitations. I will say that the first time in my lived experience, we have a totally dysfunctional federal government that created more chaos and more divisiveness around policing than I would have thought was humanly possible. What we know is that we have federal forces even today that are trying to undermine our ability to be transparent, our ability to be responsive to community needs. I like many, are praying that after January of next year, we will have at least a functioning, competent federal government that will be a partner with us as we deal with these huge issues. While I wish we could have done more at this time regarding the use of crowd control munitions, the settlement agreement still hanging over our head is, and based on the settlement agreement, it's really the best that we can do today. We've seen the settlement agreement used by both Portland Police, by the local DOJ, as a tool against transparency. And so it is really important that we fulfill the letter of the law of the settlement agreement and get that behind us so that we will stop wasting millions of dollars investing in that settlement agreement. That being said, I do think this is a very important first step. This resolution will provide the community with more transparency around police acquisitions and use of crowd control munitions while putting City Council in charge of deciding whether or not the Portland Police can purchase military grade equipment and creating reporting requirements around the use of crowd control munitions. I look forward to exploring other changes to the use of force policy in the future, including banning certain munitions, requiring easier identification of officers during crowd control efforts, not having riot-clad police be automatically deployed when there are protests, and other options I hope to discuss with our community partners. For now, I am thankful for the collaboration with Commissioner Udaly's office on this item and the work the mayor's office did around military grade munitions. I am happy to vote aye. And let me also thank Derek Bradley from my office who did the heavy lifting from my staff. And again, Hannah, you were a superstar in actually moving this process forward. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Colleagues, I'm pleased to join Commissioners Hardesty and Udaly in sponsoring this resolution. It strengthens transparency and accountability in the Portland Police Bureau. The key to building trust with the community is transparency and openness. I want to thank Hannah Holloway and Amanda Watson for their hard work on this. Earlier this year, after hearing from many community members and organizations, you're aware that I developed my initial police reform plan. This resolution accomplishes one of those items, requiring council authorization for military-style equipment. As we heard, it's consistent with one of President Obama's 21st century policing executive orders, which sought to reimagine public safety in America. Having a quarterly report to council is one more step towards that goal and our collective goal of reimagining public safety here in Portland. I'd like to thank my council colleagues, as well as the police bureau and the city attorney's office for working closely with my staff and my colleague staffs on this resolution. It's a great reflection of our collaboration towards meaningful police reform. I vote aye. The resolution is adopted. Thank you, everyone. Next item. Actually, I'd like to go through a bunch of second readings and get those out of the way first. If I could, please read 964.
Authorize water revenue bonds to finance water system capital improvements in an amount not to exceed $142 million and refund water revenue bonds.
Colleagues, this is a second reading. We've had a presentation and opportunity for public testimony. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
I just want to put on the record, I want to make sure that the city council knows actually how much money and bonds were spent. When we talked last week, I was assured that 142 was the max, but they weren't sure whether they would go out for the whole amount. And I just want to make sure that we, the council, are in a knowledgeable position as to what the ultimate decision is and when those bonds will go out for sale. I vote aye, but I will want to continue to be engaged in getting additional information as this moves forward.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. 969, please.
Authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process pursuant to Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 279C, and City Code Chapter 5.34 for construction of certain right-of-way surface stormwater facilities funded by Percent for Green.
This is also a second reading. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
So I am concerned that when we did this no bid last time, there were no contractors of color on this contract. Nothing I heard last week leads me to believe that this time will be different. And so I vote no.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. 970, also a second reading.
Authorize intergovernmental agreements and grant agreements in support of the Percent for Green program for 5 years beginning FY 2020-21, not to exceed $3 million.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. 971, second reading.
Amend price agreements with Allen Construction Management Services, LLC, CMTS, LLC, DRW, LLC, and Exceltech Consulting, Inc. for on-call construction management, inspection, and project support personnel services in the combined amount of $10,150,000.
Second reading, any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Aye. Feeling.
Daily.
I'm sorry, that title was so long that I forgot where we were in this whole process. I vote aye.
There went the suspense.
Fritz.
Thank you for your enthusiastic support, Commissioner. Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. 972, second reading.
Authorize a competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder and provide payment for construction of the Carolina Trunk WZ-02 rehabilitation project number E11005 for an estimated cost of $1,283,000.
This is a second reading. Any further discussion? Seeing none, call the roll, please.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. 973, second reading.
Authorize a 3-year master intergovernmental agreement with Portland State University to partner on projects and programs related to wastewater, stormwater, and watershed health, not to exceed $500,000.
Any further discussion on this second reading? Please call the roll.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. 974, second reading.
amend the Portland Parks and Recreation Board to clarify purpose, definitions, membership, and update administrative functions.
Second reading, any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Udaly?
Aye.
Prince?
This was a lot of work by the Parks Board. I noticed that Bonnie G. Yosick is on the call. I always like to see the actual vote when you've done a huge amount of work like this. So thank you to the entire board, to Paul Grimes, and to all of the people who have served on the board. Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Good work, Commissioner Fritz. This is a great presentation. Good work to the Bureau as well. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. 975, second reading.
Authorize intergovernmental agreement not to exceed $4 million from the Portland Parks and Recreation System Development Charge Fund to the Prosper Portland Downtown Waterfront Tax Increment Financing District Fund for acquisition of property in the downtown waterfront urban renewal area.
Second reading, any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The ordinance is adopted, and the last of our second readings is 977, please.
Adopt revised Title 21 water to be consistent with current Portland Water Bureau practices and applicable State of Oregon regulations.
Second reading. Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Udaly.
I strongly support the revised Title 21 changes in front of us today, in particular, an individual meter option that is reasonably priced for developers like Habitat for Humanity looking to expand opportunity for low-income home ownership. I vote aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for your support, Commissioner, and thank you to everybody who was involved in this two-year-long project led by Mike Sturr, the previous director, and Gabriel Solmer, very focused and diligent in meeting all of the goals, for Edward Campbell and Janet Senior for the Bull Run measures and diligent community engagement from Regna Merritt, Sarah Santner on the individual meters, and thank you, Council, for your feedback at the work session, which we found very helpful. Chief Engineer Teresa Elliott has had the overall management and oversight of the many project deliverables, and we just are so grateful to her longtime service for the city. And Lisa Vieno, thank you for your work on making the code language accessible. Finally, thank you to Astrid Yagoy on my team for her diligent support over this year. Aye.
Ryan?
Yes, terrific work session. I vote aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Now we'll go back to the beginning of the regular agenda, item number 961, please.
Appoint Christina Nieves and Thomas Mosher to the Open and Accountable Elections Commission.
Commissioner Fritz. Oh, wait. Yes, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Could we also please read 967 since to put the two Open and Accountable Election items together?
Without objection, 967.
Amend the Open and Accountable Elections Program to eliminate the election matching periods and maintain the program's oversight with the Commissioner of Public Utilities through 2022.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you so much. So what I'll do here, the first item is a report. So we'll hear the presentation on that and meet the candidates, the nominees, and then vote on the report, and then we'll move to the second item. So the Open and Accountable Election Commission advises on the implementation of the Open and Accountable Elections Program. Two commissioners, Sarin Bussell and Ricardo Lujan Valerio, recently resigned from the commission after accepting employment with the city. Nominated to finish Ricardo's four-year term, which ends on April 30th, 2023, is Christina Nieves, Christina served on my staff for many years as a policy advisor and then senior policy advisor. And she was the chief staff person in 2015-16 to help craft the Open and Accountable Elections program and guide it through. So it's particularly delightful to be appointing her to fill this role now that she has moved on to work for Common Cause. And she's an excellent source of the knowledge of the principles and values that guided the creation of the program, was very involved in the community engagement for it, and she's very invested in ensuring the program's success in perpetuity. Nominated to finish Theron Bustle's two-year term, which ends on April 30th, 2021, is Thomas Mosier. He is an attorney with many years of experience in election law and campaign finance and has experience running campaigns. He has devoted his career to getting overlooked and underserved communities engaged in the political process and expanding the voices of working people, which he currently does with the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 555. Both Ms. Nieves and Mr. Mosher are here to introduce themselves and why they're excited to serve on the Open and Accountable Elections Commission. So first, let's invite Christina Nieves to introduce herself.
Hi, everyone. This is Christina Nieves here. For some reason, I'm not able to start my video, but can everybody hear me right now?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Yes, again, my name is Christina Nieves, Associate Director of Common Cause Oregon. We are a grassroots organization that focuses on pro-democracy issues and increasing government transparency. So obviously, campaign finance reform and open and accountable elections is at the top of our priority list. Before I jump into talking about myself and my interest in joining the commission, I just want to again echo the comments that have been made regarding the difficulty of this last year and the immense challenges we have faced. And as city council members, you all have had to make some really hard decisions regarding budget and resource allocation. But it's clear that you are all still committed to ensuring Portlanders are able to be involved in the city's decision-making process. And one way to do that, that you are very familiar with, is supporting our public board and commission. So thank you for your support. Again, as Commissioner Frantz mentioned, I was on her team and managed the creation and implementation of our wonderful public campaign finance program. During this process, we did face many challenges, but we pushed forward because we and our amazing coalition of organizations believe that Portland voters deserved the ability to experience campaign and electoral process differently than what was the status quo. In my new role in Common Cause Oregon, I have been attending the commission's monthly meetings, which are now, of course, virtual. And I'm so humbled by the results we've seen. The work of the commission members, the program's ability to inspire new hope and trust in our city's electoral process. I would love the opportunity to continue to help this program succeed come what may. Participating in boards or commissions or really any type of group decision-making process is not always easy, as I'm sure my city council members are very familiar with. But the process is worth it if it is done correctly. If appointed to the commission, I will advocate for equitable decision-making and hold true to the program's values, which is to increase participation in our electoral process and make sure that our Portland voters know that big money does not run our democracy. As a Latina, as a Portlander, and as someone who truly wants to see renewed belief in our system, I'm grateful for the opportunity to join the Open and Accountable Elections Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. And now Thomas Mosier.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the Commission. I want to thank you for this opportunity to address you today, and thank you for the opportunity to serve on this commission, potentially. I've been fairly engaged with the Office of Open Accountable Elections for a while now, through individual interests as well as engagement with the organizations I've been a part of, such as UFCW Local 555. I'm excited for the chance to more formally work with the program staff, and I believe my extensive background in both elections and campaign finance regulations, as well as my vast direct campaign experience, both working on campaigns and working for organizations contributing to campaigns, will be an asset to the commission and the program. As stated before, I've been an attorney for over 12 years, working specifically in campaign finance and elections law in the city of Philadelphia, and then here in Portland for the last about 5 years. I've worked on almost 100 campaigns in my time now, and have been doing a lot with finance law around campaigns in multiple states and at the federal level. I'm extremely excited about the success of the programs achieved in this last election cycle, and I'm looking forward to working with Director Matei and staff and the other board members to ensure the continued success of the program going forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you both for your willingness to serve. You bring a wealth of experience. Director Susan Matei is on the line if anybody has any questions. If not, I move the report.
We have a motion.
Second. Second.
Commissioner Ryan seconds Commissioner Fritz's motion. Any further discussion? Please call the roll on the report.
You Daly.
Well, thank you for your willingness to serve. I think the first round of open and accountable went better than possibly any of us thought it would. And I am excited to contribute my experience and feedback into strengthening it moving forward. I vote aye.
Fritz?
My chief of staff, Tim Crail, and I are just super excited about both of these nominees. Christina, as I mentioned, it has been a key part of the program ongoing. And the United Food and Commercial Workers 555 similarly have been at the table all along. So, Thomas, it's good to learn more about your experience across the nation. This commission is, what a commission this is. It's an amazing group of people who do stellar work and who seem to like each other and get along well, too. So that's, it's really, I'm almost speechless. I'm so happy with how this has all gone. So I'll just vote aye.
Ryan?
Yes, thank you. And thank you, Christina. I didn't realize all the context that you bring to this. As one of the first participants with many others this past spring and summer, I just want to thank you. Experience matters, and we're really fortunate to have both of you join the commission. Aye.
Hardesty.
I also want to thank Christina. Christina, your leadership has gotten us to what I think we would all agree was a phenomenal campaign season utilizing this new public finance system. Thomas, I appreciate your willingness to continue to provide your expertise for the oversight committee for this activity. I just want to say to Commissioner Fritz, passing and stewarding this open and accountable elections process will go down in the history books as one of your finest accomplishments here at the City of Portland. I am pleased to vote aye.
Wheeler.
These are two solid individuals, and we're lucky that both of you are willing to serve in this capacity. I'm very happy to vote aye. The appointments are approved. The report is accepted. Thank you. 967, Commissioner Fritz, did you want to continue with that?
Thank you, I do. So how this is going to go, we're going to have a brief summary of the cycle, of the first cycle led by Director Susan Matei, and then we'll go into the details of what the code changes are. So as we've just said, the Open and Accountable Elections Program recently successfully completed its first election cycle. And as Commissioner Udaly acknowledged, I think it went better than any of us had hoped or dreamed. And a lot of that is due to the commission and to the director and the staff at the office. And the both the council and the Technology Oversight Committee took an interest in ensuring that the program was successfully implemented with the software. And it worked perfectly. So now here to give an update on, now that the first cycle is over, is Open Accountable Elections Director Susan Matei.
Thank you. Let me just get my PowerPoint shared. Is everyone seeing the PowerPoint?
Yes, we are.
Great, thank you. So I have a quick update on the program since we were last presenting before the City Council. Our first two major accomplishments were simply launching the program in time for the 2020 elections, and it was a little dicey at a few moments about whether that would be possible. On top of that, it was a high priority to get the software launched in time, if humanly possible. And thanks to a partnership with Civic Software Foundation, not only did they deliver software to us for $150,000, which is a bargain, but it on the city end of it, it enabled us to implement the program with far less staff time spent on processing each transaction manually, and instead a lot of the work being done in an extremely efficient way, saving us a lot of personnel budget costs. And on top of that, it has these, you know, data visualizations for the public so that the public can see how campaigns are funded essentially in real time in a digestible way, which I don't believe any other government provides digestible campaign finance data like this. And once the program was launched, our main sort of summary of our, you know, our what we're proud of is that we weathered a lot of challenges, and many of which were anticipated. We were very intentional about having strong program integrity protocols because, you know, you expect that, people are going to try and game a system. And our program integrity protocols were successful. But then we also had some unexpected challenges. We weren't expecting a special election. It doubled our certified candidates from 8 to 16. Which doubled our workload. And thanks to the software, we were able to handle that without having to massively increase personnel costs. We also kind of weathered the challenge when suddenly the Oregon State Supreme Court applied contribution limits about 5 weeks before the primary, and our program had to adjust to that climate as well. And one thing that we are proud of is that there have been no lawsuits challenging any of our program determinations. Or even appeals of any of our program determinations. And I certainly thank the city attorney's office for, you know, sitting with me and working through any of the tricky legal decisions and, you know, helping me make the best informed, best defensible choice possible. The last time I was before you with the budget slide, it looked a lot like this, and I'm glad that we were able to keep to the this general slide. Not only was the program solvent in the 2020 election cycle, even with the special election, which doubled our number of certified candidates, but we were also able to keep the vast majority of funds, 74%, going toward matching funds and not toward overhead like personnel, technology, or administration. But I did want to note for you all that the newly enforceable contribution limits for candidates not participating in the program is expected to result in future election cycles on more candidates opting in to the program, which should put upward pressure on the amount of money we need to spend on matching funds in order for the program to be solvent. So it's something to keep in mind, even, you know, as we are going through future fiscal year budgets about how to keep the program solvent through that. We are looking at qualitative and quantitative metrics of performance for the program. That's going to take a little bit more time, but our initial performance metrics are looking pretty positive. Most candidates opted into the program. 23 of 41 candidates with political committees chose to participate in the program. 7 of 8 candidates in runoffs participated. 3 of 4 winning candidates participated. You really just want to see all those numbers above 50%, and those are. Initial data is also suggesting that the program increased small donor participation in the elections. A survey of small donors for whom we had email addresses, so it wasn't 100% of them, indicated that they had never given to a city candidate before. And initial data suggests that the zip codes in Portland that tend to contribute the least to city candidates looks like they doubled what they gave this election cycle compared to previous election cycles. So it looks like we might be achieving broader and more even engagement across the city. Although there's still more to be done on that count, but doubling impact looks, you know, is a good first step for a first cycle. And then on our survey of small donors, we had 427 responses, and over half of them felt the program was achieving goals in the 2020 cycle, including goals like ensuring representation by office holders that reflect the diversity of the city, reducing barriers for everyday Portlanders to run for office, and ensuring that elected leaders in Portland are accountable to all Portlanders. I just wanted to give you a preview of what's going to happen once we have a full analysis of our quantitative and qualitative program performance metrics. We're conducting user experience research, and that we are expected to complete it and have a public report ready in early 2021. And then on top of that, the Open Accountable Elections Code requires the Open Accountable Elections Commission to issue its own report that will include the other qualitative and quantitative metrics of program performance, highlights from the user experience research, the results of an internal audit we're performing that is also required by code, and then their recommendations on how to improve the program, how to update the code, the rules, and the internal policies and practices. So that's something to look forward to early this spring. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Susan, I don't have a question, but I'll chime in here and just say how much I appreciate the outreach that you're currently conducting in the interviews that you're engaged in, and just really your personal desire to see this program continue to improve with time, and the fact that you're making that effort to really go out and engage with people, whether they participated or not, I think is a really smart and thoughtful idea. And I acknowledged that previously privately, but I also wanted to say that publicly because you deserve it. So thank you for that. Commissioner Hardesty.
Sorry, I was on mute. Susan, I just want to really appreciate the incredible work that you did this year in managing this program. I remember some of our earlier city council conversations where you were the optimist and things were moving at an extremely fast clip. You have maintained your optimistic attitude and approach through a lot of craziness, especially in this year, which is not a year that any of us would have anticipated would have turned out the way it has. But I just want to applaud the incredible work from the very beginning that you have put into this. And I want to acknowledge publicly that you kept your word, which was on time, on budget, and accessible and fair for all Portlanders. There is nothing about what you've done over this first go-round that I would recommend that you do different, other than maybe get a little more sleep. And with experience now, you know how it's gonna play out. But I just wanna take this moment to really applaud you. Without your leadership, there is no way we would have had the results that we've had in this very first round of this public finance effort. So thank you for all you do. Please extend my thanks to your team, because I know there's no one person shop in the city of Portland, but really excellent work and far exceeds my expectations at the beginning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, anything else, or we'll go to public testimony?
No, actually, we're not done yet.
I apologize. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Susan, there we go. Now I can get back to my script. Hang on. Here we go. So that was, we just wanted to give you a preview of the report that the council will be getting in the new year. We do today have some small time sensitive changes to the code. The Open Accountable Elections Commission recommended these changes. Community feedback was received from the Voice for All Portland Coalition, which helped pass and support implementation of the Open and Accountable Elections Program. So we have a cadre of community advisors as well as the commission. And so Program Director Susan Mote will now describe the two amendments.
Thank you. So one amendment keeps the program oversight in under the Commissioner of Public Utilities through December 31st, 2022. The reason is this, the Open and Accountable Elections Commission was tasked by code to recommend where the program should be housed. What their recommendation is to amend the charter to create an independent commission that will house the program and could also house other campaign finance or election related city work if so chosen. It'll take time to amend the charter. And so in the interim, the commission recommended that the program stay under the Commissioner of Public Utilities through December 31st, 2022. The second amendment is a simplification of the program timeline. One of the universal pieces of feedback we're receiving in our user experience research is that the program is too complex, making it difficult to understand and comply, and that complexity can undermine inclusivity. So one factor that we can fix pretty quickly is to reduce the complexity is to change, to simplify the program timeline. Right now there's a primary election period and a general election period, and then there's a primary matching period and a general matching period, and they start and end on different dates, and different rules apply to each. And it's very complex to understand, you know, which rules, you know, stop applying on April 28th and versus which rules stop applying on May 19th, you know. So what this does is that it eliminates the primary and general matching period so that the only relevant timeline is the primary election period, which ends on the primary day, and the general election period, which ends on the general election day. And then any changes to how the program works that don't coincide exactly with election day are just expressed as, well, this stops 10 days prior to the day of the primary election. It should just simplify things. And by passing this one right now, as opposed to waiting in the spring and when we have full recommendations from the Open Accountable Elections Commission, it just enables us to publish our calendar for the program and other program materials that are much more simplified on December 18th, because December 18th is officially the first day of the 2022 election cycle, when all candidates who want to run for city office in 2022 need to start following program rules if they wish to participate in the program. And I'm available for any questions if people have them on the amendments.
Colleagues, any questions? Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Susan. I guess my question is about the permanent home for this program. It sounds like there will be a recommendation coming from the commission. I still continue to believe that the appropriate home is the Office of the Auditor, and I plan to actually make that proposal to the Charter Review Commission sometime next year after they have commenced their work. But I also don't want to be in conflict with the commission that's doing the oversight. So can you explain why they believe a standalone commission somehow would be better than actually having it under the auditor, who is actually responsible for auditing everything that happens at the City of Portland?
Well, one reason was that they felt that, you know, the auditor is an elected office and can run under the program, or opponents who are running against the auditor can run under the program. And so they felt that it would be better if it were implemented by an office that wasn't sitting directly under any elected official that would be running under it or opposed by people running under it. And it's not an unusual structure. There are about 32 programs like this across the country, and half of them do sit with whoever does run the elections. So it is a workable solution, even when that person is an elected official. But then the other half are housed under independent commissions that don't sit under any elected official so that they can maintain independence.
Thank you. That actually makes sense to me. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Does that complete the presentation, Commissioner Fritz? Commissioner Ryan has a question.
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to acknowledge Susan while you're here. Thank you so much, you and your team. As someone that was a user of your services, I can say how impressed I was with how nimble you were. I get why you're changing the matching date on one hand, but I'm telling you, your staff was pretty overwhelmed. And I know that one reason there was probably a bigger window was because of that overload. So I think as a council member, I'll be sensitive to the needs of labor to meet those deadlines when we crunch them up a little closer. So, but anyway, I just want to thank you and your team. And also I want to give acknowledgement to Commissioner Fritz. This is definitely, I think, a national best practice in campaign finance reform. And I think a lot of people are looking at Portland and how we're managing this. And as a first-time user of it, I can say it ran very smoothly. And most of that was because of your professional stance. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor, that completes our presentation.
Very good. Any public testimony on this item, Keelan?
No one signed up.
All right. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Next is 962, a proclamation.
Proclaim December 2020 to be Bi-Local Month.
Colleagues, I am very pleased to introduce this next item. It recognizes the very essential role that small local businesses play in our city and, of course, in our economy. This action will note the steps that the city has taken in partnership with local organizations to create and improve public safety and retail activation initiatives. It'll also call attention to the fact that many small business owners, particularly those in retail, make much of their annual income during the holiday season. It'll also ask Portland residents and visitors alike to support small businesses, particularly those owned by people of color, in both the central city as well as in the neighborhood shopping districts. Partnership has been critical to our effort to highlight small businesses, encourage the support of local retailers. I'm deeply appreciative of the Portland Business Alliance, Travel Portland, the Central East Side Industrial Council, Business for a Better Portland, Bricks Need Mortar, Venture Portland, Built Oregon, Downtown Portland, and Greater Portland Inc. for their incredible commitment to our city. Today, we have two local business owners, Christine Azar of Azar Indulgences and Omar Solomon of Zacatl, to speak to this effort and share their perspectives. Welcome.
I don't know if I'm on.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
We can hear you.
Okay, hi. Sorry, my screen is frozen, so I don't know if it's my internet, but this is Christine Azar. Thank you for having me on to speak about this and for all the work that you're all doing. So we appreciate you. One second. I'm so sorry. 1 second. 5 minutes. I'll explain that in a second. there's Robert. I've been feeding him for 5 years. He's one of the homeless people that I try to help. So he comes in every day for like orange juice and coffee and stuff, but 5 minutes. but I started my business 5 years ago. I own Azar Indulgences. We specialize in ethically sourced Belgian style chocolate that's all made in Beirut and Lebanon. That's where I'm from. And so we had, pre-COVID, we had two locations in downtown Portland, and we're working on actually our franchise, which was supposed to start in May of 2020. So obviously post-COVID, all of that has changed, and now we have one location at the Heathman Hotel. And I've put together a few things that I think, and based on the people that I talk to here at my shop, and local Portlanders and also local business owners, that I feel are kind of a challenge. So for me, it's interesting because my shops have always been in hotels, so it's like a double whammy. It's obviously the COVID, everything dealing with everything else going on with the city, and the hospitality industry has all kind of pummeled my business. So we closed in March and I reopened 2 weeks ago now. So sorry, and I've got some notes. So, and I'll kind of go through these and please let me know if you want me to elaborate, and but I want to be respectful of everyone else's time. So the first thing for me as a downtown business owner is creating a safe downtown environment should be number one. That's to bring back employers, employees, customers, including the tourism, which is what we all rely on. Like, in other words, taking steps to bring back commerce to the downtown corridor. Because if we look any other neighborhood, there are people that are shopping the small business and trying to support them, but people are staying away from downtown Portland, and even locals are staying away from downtown Portland. And that's a huge concern, and my hope is that we work on that and bring them back to shop. Number two, and I'll start it by saying, I mean, I was born in Beirut and Lebanon. I was born during the Civil War. I've worked very hard to get to where I'm at today. And it's not lost on me that there are, that racial injustice exists. It's not lost on me that we have a real issue with policing in this country. That's not lost on me. And also, as someone who has two Black nieces and a nephew that I pray for daily for their safety, I understand what it is to have someone that you love and that you worry about their safety simply based on their skin color. And so I support peaceful protesting. I support the Black Lives Matter movement more than I can think I can even describe because of my nieces and my nephew. And other things as well, but really my nieces and my nephew. So I think number two, honestly, is actively prosecuting the bad apples that are involved in the past of months of many protests who obstructed commerce and law enforcement, and send the signal that this behavior is not tolerated. My husband and I had dinner here on Saturday. We were sitting outside at Fogo de Chao. I'm trying to support as much as I can being in downtown. We had, you know, kids running through the dining area on their skateboards or whatever. It's like there's this general consensus that it's just a free-for-all down here. It's not. We need to send a message. Like, our city needs to be safe, and we need to hold people accountable. Three, and I promise that's it. What is the city's plan to address the homeless situation, specifically the homeless who are mentally ill or addicted to drugs? Pulling in here this morning, there was a gentleman on the corner, obviously struggling, like, no judgment, obviously they're struggling, and he's yelling and screaming and throwing garbage, and two people staying at the hotel actively tried to walk around him. That is a problem here. We've got eight guests today. It's not like we're working with hundreds of guests like we always do. So when you have that happening on a regular basis, people are not going to want to come downtown. So that's really all I had prepared. Like, these are the items that I've seen and the things that I'm witnessing here as a business owner.
Christine, thank you for that. And I want to acknowledge your frustration and assure you are not alone. I work with all the organizations that I mentioned previously, and we're hearing a lot of the same stories. The thrust of my second term will be around safety, homelessness, and livability. And I'm working with many people in these organizations that represent businesses, particularly small businesses, on downtown revitalization as well as a livability strategy. And those will also be not just for the downtown core, but also the neighborhood business districts as well. So I want you to know that help is on the way, and I understand your frustration. And I thank you for remaining open despite all of the challenges.
We're here, we're not going anywhere. I believe in the city, I love the city. And I think if anyone can take a challenge and make a huge opportunity, it's the city, so I know it'll happen. But one just small thing. When I usually mail my stuff, I mail it out of either Gresham or Troutdale because I live on that side of town. And I always have my Support Portland bags with me because I want to talk about Portland and get people to come down here. So right now, 2 days ago when I was at, or Monday, yeah, Monday, and the post office, the line was out the door. And everyone was asking about Portland. And these are people that live 20 minutes away that don't want to come downtown Portland. We need to work on those people too. More so than even the tourists. Tourism is going to come back. Everyone's itching to fly somewhere. My parents are getting ready. Like, they, as soon as the vaccine, they need to go, they want to travel. So that will eventually come back. But we also have to change the narrative of the communities outside of Portland.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Omar, you with this? Do we have Omar on the line? Keelan? Anybody? Can anybody hear me or do I just freeze up?
No, I hear you, Mayor, but I don't hear anybody else hearing you.
I hear
Sorry,
you.
Mayor, I was trying to unmute. I don't see Omar on the line. Oh,
good, then unless anybody has comments, I'll read the proclamation. Commissioner Ryan, I think your hand is up from last time, or did you want to say something?
No, not last time, but I can't stop thinking about Belgium chocolate right now. So
I know. Yeah. Right, lunch, Christine. What are you doing to us?
Sorry.
Commissioner Hardesty has her hand raised.
Thank you, Mayor. I will be supporting this resolution, but I also want to be very mindful that we have significant community members that have no money to go shopping anywhere. And I do not want this to imply that somehow we are encouraging people to spend resources they don't have, especially when we know what the economic devastation is for many of our community members. So I'm gonna support this in the spirit under which I believe you developed it. But I would very much like to see us do a resolution in January that reaffirms that we want people to shop locally, because that's how our small businesses are going to come back together. I don't want to leave the false perception that we're trying to encourage people to spend a whole bunch of money for Christmas that people in our community just simply don't have. So I just wanted to put that on the record before you read the resolution, and know that I support the intentions behind it, but I'm much more interested in how we're going to engage people to shop locally in January and beyond.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for the opportunity to clear the values, and I'll read the proclamation in a moment. But as you know, one of the consequences of the pandemic and people being physically distanced is that every third vehicle you see on the street is an Amazon vehicle. And Amazon is an important player in Portland, as it is in many cities around the nation. But the concern I have is that if people get too used to the idea of always checking the large global retailers that are online first, that will eventually erode the uniqueness of our neighborhood business districts, as well as the downtown core, and therefore erode some of what makes Portland a really wonderful place to live and to work and to visit. And so this is not targeted towards those large global online retailers, except to say to our local residents, if you care about the mom and pop businesses on the corner or in your neighborhood, before you go to Amazon, see if there isn't the option here locally. Support the local businesses first. And if you don't find what you're wanting, then of course, go online and knock yourself out. They serve that useful purpose. But this is really just acknowledging that this is an important time of year for local retailers in particular. They are struggling under the COVID crisis and the lack of people downtown. As we just heard from our invited guest testimony, there are other headwinds that they're facing now as well. So this is really to show them a little love, show them the support that I know you do want to show them, and acknowledge their importance right now, and encourage those who can to help support them. So without further ado, I will read this proclamation that is in microtype. Whereas Portland's small businesses are the backbone of the city's local economy, these establishments in the downtown and district corridors provide accessible employment for residents, attract visitors and tourists, and represent the variety of talent and entrepreneurism within the business community. They are Portland's brand. Whereas recognizing the critical need to develop safety and promotional strategies to support small businesses experiencing unprecedented declines in revenue brought on by the sustained combination of global pandemic, natural disasters, and closures throughout the year. Whereas recognizing that many small business owners make much of their annual income during the holiday season, it was essential that any public-led strategy commence by mid-November. Whereas, given the severity of the COVID-19 public health crisis, safety must be the cornerstone of all business promotion, events, and interim activations. Whereas the City of Portland, working in partnership with local organizations, took action, including launching an array of public safety initiatives, enhanced trash and graffiti removal, and increased collaboration with the Joint Office of Homeless Services. Whereas the city also recognized the need to develop a retail activation strategy to address ongoing concerns, dispel myths, and most importantly, support local small businesses, particularly those owned by people of color, the activation strategy, a collaborative effort including public, private, and nonprofit partners, seeks to promote businesses in the central city as well as all neighborhood shopping districts to ensure business owners are able to safely remain open, retain employees, and continue to provide goods and services for local residents and visitors alike. And whereas the City of Portland also recognizes the critical role partner organizations play in this work and acknowledges Portland, or a Business for a Better Portland, the Portland Business Alliance, Travel Portland, the Central East Side, Industrial Council, Bricks Needs Mortar, Venture Portland, Built Oregon, Downtown Portland, and Greater Portland, Inc. for their unceasing commitment to our city. Whereas acknowledging that while the strategy launched this month, it is neither the first nor the only effort focused on supporting Portland's small businesses, the promotion of and collaboration with parallel efforts, it's critical to our shared goal of preserving, supporting, and celebrating our local businesses, and further acknowledges the expectation of continued collaboration into the new year. Whereas the City of Portland recognizes the dynamic and creative small businesses that are vital to our city and calls on all Portlanders and guests to accept the invitation to shop local now and in the months and in the years to come. Now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim December to be Buy Local Month in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this month. Thank you all. Agenda. Oh, there it is. Too many pieces of paper. Sorry, colleagues. Next up, 963.
Authorize contract with Jacobs Engineering Group, Inc. for design services for the Bull Run Pipeline Project for $29 million.
Very good. We'll turn that over to staff.
Mayor, may I just interject here? I noticed that we're kind of running late here, and I also noticed that the way the agenda has rolled out, there's a different Bull Run projects item from the Water Bureau that's at the end of the agenda. I'm wondering if we might want to move both of them to this afternoon in order to be able to get through the morning's agenda.
So that would be 963 and which one, Commissioner?
That would be 963 and 976.
And 976. Is there any objection, colleagues, to moving those two items to the afternoon agenda?
Nope. I know we may have people signed up, and I hope that they can join this afternoon, but I just think we want to give this item the time that it deserves.
Fair enough. Very good. So without objection, we'll move those two items to the afternoon session. That puts 965 next.
Authorize new construction financing for an affordable housing project to be developed by Las Analitas Limited Partnership or a Hacienda Community Development Corporation affiliate in an amount not to exceed $17,350,050.
Thank you. Colleagues, the Las Analitas development is the third Portland housing bond project that weaves the Portland Housing Bureau's capital fund with the much needed funding for supportive services from the Joint Office of Homeless Services to provide housing for our neediest residents. We thank the developer, Hacienda CDC, one of the city's key culturally specific nonprofits, in bringing forward this project during these uncertain times when permanent supportive housing and unsubsidized extremely low-income apartments are needed more than ever. The Las Adelitas project will meet the critical needs in the Cully neighborhood of Northeast Portland and leverages off its location near the newly constructed Cully Park in proximity to the Hacienda offices that will be providing an array of services to local residents. And with that, we will turn this over to our staff. And that is Shannon, Director Callahan is here.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor. Good morning. I guess good afternoon at this point to you and the other city commissioners. I am Shannon Callahan of the Portland Housing Bureau, and I'm joined this morning by Ernesto Fonseca, the Executive Director of Hacienda CDC. Could we please put up the PowerPoint, Keelan? Are you all able to see that yet?
Not yet.
Okay. So while we wait for that to go up, I'll give you just a little background on the project. We are here today to ask for your support for the funding of the Las Adelitas Affordable Housing Development. This project is the culmination of years of community work to turn what was once a neighborhood detractor into a true community asset, providing affordable homes to over 141 households and nearly 400 people. Next slide, please, Keelan. As the mayor noted, the Las Adelitas development will be located in the Cully neighborhood on Northeast Killingsworth. It's one of nine developments which was selected through the last year's bond opportunity solicitation, and it will contribute to all of the Portland Housing Bond goals by providing deeply affordable units, supportive housing, and family size units. Next slide, please, Keelan. The project is featured here as one of the total 12 Portland Housing Bond units, two of which are already in operation and housing families. Next slide, if you could. The new development will contribute to the vibrant and wonderfully diverse Cully neighborhood with a colorful and unique exterior designed by a renowned local architect, Alex Salazar. Next slide. Las Adelitas is truly a family-focused development with 70% of the units providing affordable homes for families, including supportive housing units for households raising children who require wraparound services to address challenges they face in being successful in their housing. This development will also provide nearly 40% deeply affordable units to households who make less than 30% of area median income, which for a family of four would mean a family that makes less than $27,000 per year. Next slide. Of the total unit mix in the development, as we have mentioned, will be focused on family housing. 26 of the units will be three bedrooms and 72 of the units will be two bedrooms. The project is also furthering our city climate goals through its Earth Advantage features. Your approval today will allow the project to move forward into construction in February of 2021 and begin welcoming families in 2022. Next slide. Families will not only have a home, but they will have a true network of community support. Partners providing services for the families at the Las Adelitas include Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, who'll be providing support in households with needs related to mental health and supportive housing. And there'll be culturally specific programming by Familias en Acción, who'll be providing culturally specific support and education services for families to manage chronic health conditions. These services will be complemented by the robust services of Hacienda, who will provide all tenants financial education, child development, health services, job networking, physical fitness, cooking classes, and importantly, right now, especially a food pantry. If you would advance to the next slide. Our funding from the Portland Housing Bureau is leveraging an additional $39 million in resources from state and local partners. It's a true testament to the strength of the Hacienda and the Portland Housing Bureau developments team for being able to bring this project to financial close during such trying times. I'd also like to commend the Hacienda team. The Housing Bureau sets a 30% target for DMWESB hard construction cost and a 20% target for soft costs associated with the development. And Las Adelitas is expecting to achieve 40% DMWESB for hard costs and 80% participation for soft costs. And before I turn it over to Ernesto, I'd just like to thank him and the entire team at Hacienda for working to bring this project to fruition. Ernesto? That concludes my part of the presentation. Ernesto, are you on the call?
He may be trying to get off mute. I did see him a little earlier.
I did too. So I'm just gonna pause a moment. I do see Ernesto is there. I'm not sure if he has volume or not. I believe that two of the folks from Hacienda are also here with us today, which are Kevin Kellogg and Tracy Manning. Ernesto, are you able to be on mute now?
I'm back. Can you hear me, everyone?
We can.
Yeah, we can hear you.
I am sorry. We are having some internet issues, so I'm calling from my cell phone. It might be a little choppy this way.
All right.
So I am ready if I don't know what's going on yet.
Ernesto, I have just done an overview of the development and the project, and now we're turning it over to you for comments, and then we'll go back to council.
Excellent. Yes, I heard the overview. I wasn't sure where we were when I got cut off. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to our Mayor Ted Wheeler, as well as to the rest of the council members. I really, really appreciate the opportunity to be here. I want to also thank Director Callahan for working so positively with us and really making a difference over the past few years that we've been working together, whether it's Adelitas or many other projects. I want to address again, you know, some of the highlights that Director Callahan mentioned. You know, we are achieving and over, you know, achieving actually on the minority contracting, whether it's soft costs or construction, we're doing quite well. But I want to also thank that all of this work, you know, wouldn't have been possible without the support of the many. Habitat for Humanity, Verde, and many others, you know, came together years ago to buy the property. They left the easy part for me to buy the property back again from them and then try to redevelop this into affordable housing. For me, that was the main priority when I got here. Many plans were made, you know, over the years, from a McDonald's to a Dollar Tree to a warehouse, into what is going to be today. And I couldn't be happier to be here today thanking you for this great achievement. So with this, you know, what we're trying to simply do is to flip the narrative of a place of abuse, of a place where things that were not very desirable were happening in front of a family place, you know, which is our community here in Hacienda, into a place of determination and success. I also want to thank my team, you know, Kevin Kellogg and Tracy Manning have been just fantastic advocates, not only for the project, but also managing and putting all of this work together for us to get to this point. I really don't want to take the whole 5 minutes. I simply want to thank the council, our mayor, Director Callahan again, for all the fantastic work. And I want to also announce that if everything is funded today, we're going to have a groundbreaking opening. And I hope that you, Mayor, as well as the rest of the team and Director Callahan, can come and join us on February 12th. So that is tentatively the save the date. And with that, I'm going to leave it there for you to determine what is next. Thank you all.
Ernesto, thank you for the kind invitation. I wouldn't miss it for the world. And I also want to thank you for your ingenuity in quickly picking up the cell phone and breaking through some of the technological problems. That was, I believe the term is MacGyvering it. You did well.
Gosh, this thing was giving a headache. Disconnected twice.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We're so excited about this partnership. Thank you. Shannon, does that complete your
presentation? That actually completes our presentation. So we have our teams available to answer any questions that council may have.
Great. Colleagues, any questions for Shannon and team? Not seeing any, that's always good. Is there any public testimony on this item, Keelan?
No one signed up.
All right, very good. This is the ordinance, so we will call the roll.
You Daly?
Nice to see you, Ernesto. Happy belated birthday. I know you celebrated a milestone, as did I, a few days ago. And I'll just briefly say it's been really inspiring to see the community organizing and visioning that has come together around this project. And who would have imagined that the site of the former Sugar Shack would become home to over 100 families in the Cully community. I'm so proud of this project and everyone involved and happy to support its development. So of course, I vote aye.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Fritz.
This is a true community victory and a partnership with elected officials and with the Bureau. I'm really excited to see the plan for the new building. It looks fitting. It's the kind of building that Cully deserves, and I think it's going to be a fabulous development. So thank you for the presentation. Thank you for the project. Hooray. Aye.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Ryan.
Yes, Director Callahan and Ernesto, good to see you. Congratulations. It's just exciting to listen to such a project. I will make sure it's February 12th is on my calendar. And I just really want to highlight how refreshing it is to hear how many 2 and 3 bedroom units are in this, and also the 18 units set aside for the joint office. This is exactly the type of affordable housing when people really think of the term affordable and housing that we need in this city. This is it. You hit it out of the park. So I enthusiastically vote aye.
Thank you. Hardesty.
Thank you so much, Director Callahan. I had 100 questions on this project and you answered 101 of them. So I greatly appreciate the presentation. Ernesto, I am so proud that this project is moving forward and the incredible work you've done to get it to where we are today. As Commissioner Ryan said, I always am whining about what we call affordable housing. And today I am very proud to support a project that really is a housing that people will be able to afford to live in, and not just live in, but thrive in. This is a model that I hope is not the first or last time we see at this city council. I am happy to vote aye.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Wheeler.
This project is one of the many steps we're taking to reduce chronic homelessness and provide deeply affordable housing, particularly in the Cully neighborhood of East Portland. I'd like to commend the development team for its commitment to bringing forward this project that will serve some of the most vulnerable residents of our city. This project also comes as the result of a tremendous collaboration amongst our funding partners, including the Joint Office of Homeless Services between the city and the county, Wells Fargo, Oregon Housing and Community Services, Hacienda CDC, and Redstone Equity Partners. And of course, thank all of you and the Cully neighborhood for your tireless efforts in bringing this project to fruition. This is truly an exciting partnership and can't wait to see it come to fruition. Thank you all. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item, 966.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks, Ernesto.
Bye.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Amend grant with Southeast Uplift in amount not to exceed $145,000 and reassess district coalition model for administrative simplification, expanded and equitable services.
Commissioner Fritz.
Mayor, I move to table this item.
A second.
We have a motion to table the item in a second. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
You Daly.
Well, this is disappointing. And Mayor, I know you can get annoyed when I take too long with my comments. So feel free to kick back and relax, because this is going to take a little while. I came to council today aware that some of my colleagues do not want to allow this item to be heard. This is the second time this year that council has prevented directly impacted community members from having their voice heard on this matter. I believe this is a misuse of the motion to table, which is typically used only when another matter must be dealt with before due consideration can be given to the pending main motion. It has never been utilized in my 4 years on council. There is no new information or business that has come to light. This matter has not been rushed. We have spent a year of staff time and $30,000 in public funds for on a forensic audit due to the lack of cooperation from Sweeney that confirmed a number of allegations and revealed additional serious concerns. Not only do I think this is an abuse of the parliamentary process, which I'm surprised to have coming from Commissioner Fritz, considering what a stickler for detail she is and following protocol, I respectfully suggest that Commissioner Fritz should recuse herself entirely from this matter due to her multiple conflicts of interest. Mayor, when you assigned this bureau to me, you knew it was a cleanup job. While it's the smallest bureau I've had in my portfolio up until very recently, because of the volume and urgency of the work that needed to be done, it is the bureau I have devoted the most time and staff resources to. At that time, civic life suffered from low performance and accountability. It came with a 2016 audit highlighting numerous issues and concerns that I have tirelessly worked to resolve. In the first several months, I oversaw this bureau. 10% of the staff was under investigation stemming from community complaints. 20% of the staff had to be asked to sign leave directives because they could not demonstrate basic responsibilities such as showing up to work on time or being accountable for their time while on the clock. And 50% of the bureau staff had to have their purchase cards pulled when we discovered over $120,000 in purchases that were unaccounted for. We also discovered a civic engagement system that does not represent the full diversity of our community and possibly violates federal civil rights laws and definitely does not serve our need for broad public involvement and input on our decisions and policy making. It is a system of white privilege in our city, supported and perpetuated by this and past councils. In the last 4 years, we have reorganized the bureau, eliminated inefficiencies and redundancies, professionalized the staff, doubled the number of BIPOC employees, made notable, including in management, I want to note, made notable improvements and advancements from the cannabis office to community safety, and have been responsible stewards of the public dollars. Despite the vocal opposition to progress and equity from some members of our community and council, I believe history will show that Director Rhee and I have done more to advance the mission of civic life and improve our service to the people of Portland in 4 years than has happened in decades past. This is the final item I will be presenting on behalf of civic life, and I would appreciate the respect and professional courtesy I am due as the commissioner in charge. A yes vote on this motion is an insult to me, the commissioner in charge, and my office, to Director Rhee, to Civic Life staff, to the auditing firm that conducted the audit, and to the numerous Southwest neighborhood residents who have been directly and negatively impacted by Sweeney staff and board members' actions, at least 15 of whom are here today to give public testimony, and your yes vote will silence them for the second time this year. There is no justifiable reason to postpone this item. We have done our due diligence, and I don't want to hear those words coming out of anyone's mouth, which makes you sound like you know what you're talking about and that we haven't done our jobs, because we have. We have a temporary solution for Southwest Neighborhood Associations for the remaining fiscal year. And next year, council will need to revisit the coalition contracts moving forward, which I will note it's a grossly inefficient and wasteful system where we fund 6 coalition offices, which almost exclusively rely on public dollars, and they pay 6 executive directors to oversee 15 staff. It's absurd. Sweeney has squandered enough of our time, resources, the public's dollars, and the public's trust. Failure to act now is a dereliction of our fiduciary responsibility. To recap how we got here for my colleagues and the public, this summer, council decided to pause funding for Southwest Neighborhoods, Inc., or Sweeney, pending an investigation into allegations of financial mismanagement and misrepresentation by Sweeney board members. Since the city auditor's office doesn't investigate alleged financial crimes of independent entities, Civic Life was forced to contract with an outside contractor, Marsh Minnick, a COVID-certified firm with extensive history of public audits. Unfortunately, their findings, which have now been made public, revealed $300,000 of mismanagement, fraud, waste, and abuse in its stewardship of public funds. They also revealed a culture of intimidation and suppression of diverse participants at the organization. The independent audit results were clear. Sweeney mismanaged taxpayer dollars and refused to implement accountable practices, at times through bullying and coercion. Portlanders, this organization has misspent your money. Southwest Neighborhood Associations, this organization has siphoned money away from you to support its own efforts and interests. And today, my colleagues seem to be prepared to say that Sweeney is exempt from the city's own contracting standards, financial expectations, and values, and is denying impacted community members their opportunity to be heard. Let's talk about the city's values for a moment. Our core values: transparency, fiscal responsibility, anti-racism. These values are meaningless if we refuse to assert them against entrenched inequities and abuses of power. Colleagues, this is the reason that our community partners put no stock in the many well-intended but meaningless resolutions and proclamations we make. When the comfort of those who historically hold power is in question, we abandon our values, even our own fiduciary standards. I believe accountability should be added to our seemingly aspirational list of core values, which are definitely not being upheld today, and is something that we are sorely lacking if this motion passes. I wanted to bring this resolution today to ensure that we support Southwest Neighborhood Associations, independent of Sweeney and their corrosive culture, for the remainder of the fiscal year. I believe my colleagues are more concerned about avoiding public dialogue regarding civic institutions at this moment than they are in upholding their duty as fiscal stewards for the people of Portland, and I am incredibly disappointed. Dozens of community members came in July to testify on their experiences with Sweeney and were prevented from exercising the right to speak before council. Today, the very community members who have been harassed, gaslit, bullied, and denigrated by certain Sweeney board members and staff will once again be denied a fair process. This is extraordinary. I don't think that we've ever done this to any other group of people, in at least in my 4 years on council. So perhaps there are issues afoot that I am not aware of, I don't think they're defensible. To those people who are being denied their voice, I wanna say thank you for your tireless efforts to daylight fraudulent and inequitable practices. And in advance, I want to apologize in the event this motion passes for council failing you today. To Portlanders, please don't forget this moment. Hold the next council to a higher standard. Sweeney wasted your money in a manner that suppressed diverse Portlanders from participating in their neighborhood system. If this item had passed today, Sweeney would be the third nonprofit district coalition to have to be absorbed by the city following complications and failure at the community level. We can and must have a civic engagement structure that is equitable and functional and inclusive, that serves your interests and promotes the common good. But that change needs to be championed by this council. I hope if this motion passes, that council will make a better decision in 2021. But to be honest, I'm not going to hold my breath. I obviously do not support tabling this item. I'm truly offended by this action and cooperation between the mayor and Commissioner Fritz, and I vote no.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge that this appears to be a system issue as well, and that as a council, we need to look at how we routinely have audits. And then like any audit, we have an opportunity to let the organization improve from those findings. And so I look forward to being a part of the council as we look at making this a system issue citywide. I do vote to table this. Yes, aye.
Hardesty. Wheeler. You're muted, Mayor.
First, I want to acknowledge much of what Commissioner Udaly said I support. I supported the audit of Sweeney. I am concerned about the allegations that were made with regard to Sweeney. My decision to want to table this item today has nothing to do with that, has nothing to do with the veracity of the audit, the importance of the audit. I don't think you will find any mayor who is more concerned about making sure that dollars, particularly public dollars, are spent as wisely as possible as I have throughout my career. I have never voted in my term as mayor to table an item. This is the rare exception. And I want to be clear that I and others had advised Commissioner Udaly to not bring this item now. It is not ready for prime time. Moreover, it will be highly divisive, and we will hear lots of very divisive testimony on both sides. We all agree that Southwest needs to continue to receive services. We all agree that there are issues in the audit that absolutely must be accounted for and must be addressed. But I am not prepared today to have a discussion about a death penalty solution for Sweeney without understanding who and where those services will be delivered. I was told that Southeast Uplift was prepared to deliver these services, but I've heard from others who are associated with that organization that A, they are not, or at least they were not as of last week. They were blindsided by this, and it's not clear to me whether legally there is a path for them to be able to provide those services. But at a minimum, what I believe is that this requires a thoughtful approach. I had recommended that this be moved until at least a couple of weeks from now when we have a new council that will be assembling. We'll have the bureaus in different hands. The consequences of the decision we make, if we make it right here and now today, will have a lasting impact that will impact the next council. And so my strong preference is that we not have this divisive conversation today with limited information, with a lack of clarity about what the landing pad is. If we cut off the resources to Sweeney, that doesn't set well with me. And moreover, it does not set well with me when my colleagues try to infer what my core values are or are not based on my decision as to whether I am going to or not going to support a particular ordinance on this or any other issue. And this is about the third time that somebody has tried to infer my values or call me a hypocrite or anything else based on sloppy work. It's not my job to bring forward a coherent proposal. That is the sponsor's responsibility, to bring forward a coherent proposal. So please, Commissioner Udaly and colleagues, do not put words into my mouth. Do not assume what my core values are. Give me the opportunity to show what they are. So we will move this into the next year. The council will take it up. We will address the important issues that are in the audit. We will, if necessary, find a landing pad in an organization that actually has been participatory in the conversation and wants to provide the services, and which can do so legally. Or alternatively, there may be a path to Sweeney restoring confidence and trust in the way they do business. But today is not the day to decide that. So I vote aye, the item is tabled. Next item, 968.
Approve findings to authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding requirements and authorize the use of the alternative contracting method of construction manager, general contractor for the Northwest 9th Avenue, Northwest Hoyt Street System Improvements Project number E11252.
I believe this is Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. This ordinance will support the redevelopment of the Broadway Corridor United States Post Office site, so it's really important and exciting. Environmental Services, together with the Water Bureau, are providing needed improvements to sewer, stormwater, and water services to protect human health and the environment and support the increase in residences and businesses in the redevelopment area. Procurement and Environmental Services are recommending the construction manager, general contractor method of contracting because of the specialized skills needed for this technically challenging project to improve and also to improve workforce and subcontractor diversity and to meet Prosper Portland's schedule expectation. Here today with a brief presentation are Kathleen Brennis-Morier, the city's interim chief procurement officer, and Rhonda Fast, project manager with Environmental Services.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, I am Kathleen Brennis-Morier, the interim chief procurement officer. I am here to recommend authorization to exempt the 9th West North Avenue and Northwest Hoyt Street System Improvements Project from the competitive low bid procurement requirement that will allow the city to issue a request for proposals solicitation and to negotiate a contract for construction manager, general contractor services. City Council, acting as the local contract review board, has the authority to exempt projects when findings are made that support an alternative procurement method. The findings included in this ordinance address the technical complexity of the project, specialized expertise required, market conditions, public benefits, and other compelling factors for using the construction manager general contractor delivery method. These findings were made available for public comment and no comments were received. The construction manager general contractor delivery method is a qualifications-driven contracting process that will allow us to evaluate and select a contractor based on the experience and qualifications necessary to deliver this project. Additionally, a CMGC contract provides for the construction contractor to participate in the design process and in value engineering throughout the project to ensure cost containment and schedule efficiencies. The initial contract covers services during the design phase and establishment of a guaranteed maximum price for the construction of the project. Once the guaranteed maximum price is negotiated, we will come back to Council for approval of the guaranteed maximum price and authority to proceed with the construction contract. This contracting method also provides for greater opportunities for subcontractors certified with the Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity and for a more diverse workforce on the project, given the collaborative approach during project development and negotiating the community benefits agreement that will apply to this project. Specific outreach approaches will be implemented after contract award. Unless you have questions for me, I'll hand it over to Rhonda Fast, the manager, who will provide an overview of the project.
I am very sorry to interrupt, and I apologize. So I have an excused absence 5 minutes ago. Commissioner Hardesty had to leave at 12:30. Commissioner Udaly has left the call. We are not going to have a quorum to be able to continue this meeting. So I would recommend that we move all of the remaining items onto our afternoon agenda and take it up from there. We've heard your presentation. It was a good one. But I've got to go because I've got a 1 p.m. call that I must be on. And so I apologize, but we just don't have our quorum left.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll be back.
Can you come back this afternoon if people have questions?
Absolutely. We'll be back.
I hate to do that to you and to people waiting to testify. I apologize. That's not the way we do things here, but we need to have a quorum in order to legally conduct business. So with that, we are adjourned until 2 p.m.